Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Down in Front. Our movie this week is Speed. I did it slowly. It was funny. Anyway, pop in your DVD or Blu-ray, press play, press pause when the 20th century logo fades to black. The first frame you perceive of all black after 20th century logo fades down. Press pause. In a second, I'll say if you want to pause. If you want to press play, you'll play. We'll watch the movie together. Perfect sync. I feel like you know the commentary. Some people are in your head. Those friends, I figure myself as always, Steve Christie. My friend Seth Brower.
Hello.
Michael Dorkman Scott.
Hi.
And Trey the Amazing Stokes.
What can I do?
Now, Speed is, we didn't know it at the time, but that was sort of Jan de Bont's major entrance onto the world stage with regards to future direction. And Speed is...
I knew it at the time.
It's fucking awesome.
You were 12.
It's fucking... Well, yeah, that too. But it's awesome. Like, it's a really tense action thriller. The thing that people tend to forget about Speed is that there are about 25 or 30 minutes before you get on the bus, and there's about 40 minutes after you get off.
It's three movies, only one third of which is the bus.
Yeah. Right. But I really enjoy watching almost every frame of Speed, and I don't have a lot of major qualms with it. It's a fun action thriller. It's interesting for me, seeing as how, as Trey pointed out, I was about a zygote when this movie came out. Looking back at the action blockbuster movies of history, like just go back every 10 years and just kind of look at checkpoints of this is what an action movie was in 2005. This is what an action movie was in 1995. This is 85. And it's weird to see how even going back 15 or 20 years, while this is not a Rembrandt of a movie or anything like that, it's a really tense and taut and well-produced movie. And there's a lot of great stuff going on in that. And it's all it does is lead me to questions like, what went wrong and what's different now. But Speed, for being a summer blockbuster movie, is, I would say, top of the heap good stuff. But then again, if this is just what your average run-of-the-mill summer blockbuster movie was 15 years ago, my question isn't, Speed is great, why aren't more like it? It's, no, what happened? What's wrong now? And hopefully the summer movies of 2022 are much better than the ones we have now. But in any case, I like Speed a lot, and I look forward to finding out what we have to say about it, because off the top of my head, all I can think is, yeah, this movie does a lot of things right. There's some really cheesy moments, too, but who cares? Seth?
That's the nature of the summer blockbuster. You need to balance that, you know, that enjoyable cheesy factor with the fun action, and it definitely manages to do it quite well. I think I saw this in the theaters. I enjoyed it at the time. I definitely enjoy watching it whenever I see it now, because it does have a lot of stuff going on with it, and you know, it's definitely a hallmark of good marketing that everyone just remembers the bus. But you know, I enjoyed it, and I like it in spite of I enjoy Keanu Reeves in many of his movies, but he is not my favorite actor by any means. So it's one of those, oh, it's him, and he's doing a cool job. I enjoy seeing it now with Newsroom and Jeff Daniels. It's like, oh, look at that. That's kind of interesting.
Jeff Daniels. It's weird how Jeff Daniels is an evergreen somehow, but like Jeff Daniels doesn't get old on you for some reason.
He's in everything. He was in two of the top 10 movies of 1994, and this is one of them.
What was the other one?
Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. That, whoa!
The fact that Jeff Daniels has had a career when in 1994 he became famous for a guy who has an attack of explosive diarrhea in a major motion picture is amazing. It's a testament to his durability as an actor.
And not to mention,
That's a career-ending shot scene. That
exactly.
Scene.
Yeah. Cameron Diaz with cum in her hair kind of moment.
Yeah.
How are you going to pull out of this one, yo?
Yeah. It's either going to make you for life or it's going to destroy your career.
And now you can see Jeff Daniels playing guitar on Craig Ferguson.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I enjoy it very much. So I'm curious to see what I can come up to say actually about it constructive. But
yeah,
this is one of those, we're going to run into that good movie problem where it's like, yeah, that was really clever how they did that. And we just have to notice when they're doing something good and call it out. But
yeah.
Dorkman, how do you feel about Speed? Do you like Speed?
Yeah. And actually watching it yesterday, again, to review it for this, because it's been a while since I saw it, I was actually really impressed by it.
Yeah.
How well it's constructed and stuff like that.
Coming up on 20 years old, this movie.
I should point out that this, you know, this is not a run-of-the-mill mid-90s action feature. This is, weirdly enough, because people have tended to forget about it, this was huge at the time. This was a real blockbuster.
Yeah,
this
it's
was
one of the top, and for not being expected to be. I mean, it was like, okay, well, it'll do well, probably, but it's one of the top 10 of the year, in a year where Forrest Gump was number one.
Yeah.
And Pulp Fiction was also out. That was number 10 for the year. Dumb and Dumber was in the middle.
Yeah.
Lion King, I think, was another big
year. 94
was a big year.
Actually.
Yeah. But this was unexpected. There wasn't, you know, there wasn't a lot of expectation. It's a first-time director. Keanu Reeves wasn't a big movie star, really. I mean, he was a name, but he was, you know, he was Bill and Ted in Point Break.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, action movie? You know, it's on the level of Bruce Willis in an action movie called Die Hard? I don't think so. You know, yeah. It's kind of was that. It's really his Die Hard.
You were impressed by it?
I was impressed by it. I was impressed by how well constructed it is because, like you said, part of it is they don't spend as much time on the bus as the pitch would lead you to believe they do and as your memory would lead you to believe they do. So just things are always moving forward. There's always a new complication. There's always a new issue going on, and especially while they're on the bus. And it all feels very organic and real. It makes sense. It doesn't feel like they're creating artificial drama or tension. It doesn't feel like they have nothing to do and or that things are becoming repetitive and dull, which I believe was kind of the problem with Speed 2.
Among other things.
My
yeah.
God.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so this succeeds in so many ways and is really... So it really is like a textbook example of like a high concept. You know, I think this was one of the examples in many books.
That's my thing. It's like, this is the movie where I learned the concept of high concept.
Yeah,
I want to talk about that, but let's wait.
Yeah, we'll wait till we start.
Also,
start rolling,
and but, everything you said. Yeah. Also, Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, Dennis yeah. Hopper's great.
All right, Trey.
I didn't see this movie in the theater because I was in Japan when this movie came out.
Nobody's perfect, Trey.
Yeah, and I was. Aware of the movie when I came back, a friend of mine said, "I said, you know, well, what movies did I miss?" He goes, "Well, Speed was pretty good." He was kind of down on Speed because of the three different movies in one. He says, "It's really kind of three movies. It's you think it's about the bus, but
it's an really elevator heist, it's a bus heist, and yeah, it's a subway heist,
and then it's a subway thing." You know, so I didn't see it in the theater. I don't think I ever saw it in the theater. I think I came on a video. And I'll check it out, and I was like, wow, okay.
Oh, there's a whole movie on this tape.
Well, this is really quite. I was, you know, phenomenally impressed by it, and just I think it's one of the great you know, one of the great action movies of its era, and it is it's firing, pardon, and no real pun intended, it's firing on all cylinders. You know, mm-hmm. Everything's working, and a lot of it comes down to, you know, even Keanu, you know, who Keanu is kind of good in, you know. You know, he's the Phillips head screwdriver of acting. It's when you need a flathead, don't get Keanu because it doesn't even fucking fit in the slot. But, you know, when you've got a Phillips head slot,
and Keanu's you your guy.
Get your Phillips head actor out and you're golden. And he's really great in this. You know, it's right in his zone. And of course, the other thing that this movie brought us is, you know, Sandra Bullock. And there's no
golf clap.
There, yeah, exactly. Well done, movie. Yes, she'd been an actress. She'd been in things, but she was in no way a star. This was her big, you know, breakout thing. And she just, you know, it's hard to picture anyone else in the roles. Yeah, obviously, there are actresses who could have done it, but this is it's a star making role, and it made her a star, and rightly so. She's great.
If this movie was made now, she would have been Elizabeth Banks, probably. Like, maybe. Funny could actory be. Lady, but who's
yes,
trying to...
That's
trying
the
to
zone. That's the type of character.
Yeah.
She walks that line, you know, between being funny and comedic and ditzy, but also being, you know, a legitimate action heroine at the same time.
So at the point where the 20th Century Fox logo fucking finally faded to black, if I recall correctly, it was about 15 seconds of that logo, but point of black. You got pause. Put your finger on the button so you can press play here in a second. Here we go. 3, 2, 1... Unpause.
Weirdly enough, Sandra Bullock had already been in Demolition Man, so she had,
that was
had,
93,
a, had
yeah.
a featured role, but not a star, really a star role.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that one was much more of a Stallone Snipes
yeah.
vehicle.
So now we're getting this kind of cool, kind of cheesy, genre as hell intro title where you're just kind of getting this...
This is like Hitchcock would open a movie like
yes.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
This kind of... The elevator shaft.
My favorite.
Slowly revealing titles.
It was so wonderful watching this yesterday because I'd forgotten about it, and you know it's very you know, almost video toaster compared to the kind of yeah. sophistication we have today.
It really
but
is.
But the title itself, and then like it comes at the screen and makes yeah. this like super digital
yeah,
like,
zing
noise, and then. Yeah, and then the music just picks up like dun 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 dun. Dun. I was like,
while the camera goes back to doing yeah. exactly the same thing. Oh, things are happening.
It's like
now.
The camera's like, wait,
yeah,
All right, go.
I was suddenly, I was so excited about it, just in like in a slightly ironic way. I'm like, oh, here come the 90s, yeah. Right at me.
Literally in your face.
Yeah, at 50 miles per hour, let's do this. But yeah, it...
Jan de Bont seems to have a thing with Alan Ruck, because...
At least for these two movies.
Yeah, because yeah. Alan Ruck wasn't a thing. Like, he did Ferris, and then he kind of just got, never got one.
He was
one.
On Sin City.
Well, yeah.
But I think
too.
That would not was Spin City. Spin City, thank you.
Spin City was.
But
yeah.
Was that even happening at this point? Was that after?
I think that was after.
After he did that. Yeah. So yeah, he had been sort of like child actor, whatever happened to guy.
Right.
And then you know, he was back in this.
And you know, Alan Ruck between Twister Speed and Ferris Bueller kind of gives you a good intro. And then if you want to get more Alan Ruck, Spin City until you know, right at the second star in On Tall Morning. But yeah, by the way, just behind the curtain stuff, we are doing this episode on Amazon streaming without subtitles, so yeah. God help us all. Here we go.
And the time, it's hitching a little bit, too.
Yeah,
so
is
the time,
is,
I'm already,
yeah.
I'm already
timing
a little worried.
Is the chat room still open? That may be on the same
no,
machine.
No, it's not.
Okay.
The only thing that's running on this computer right now is Amazon.
Okay. Yeah. Damn you, Amazon.
Amazon.
Yeah, this might be a thing. We'll see.
Now, the thing that impressed me about this shot is you kind of go, okay, I get it. You know, you're, but is the fact that it stops
going.
And then turns into a moving shot. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. All right, cool.
Oh, does it do that? I had no.
It does. It does move. You know, it's like, oh, see, look, it seems to have changed into.
I think the realization I'm having is, wow, this is a really tall building.
It's a very tall. Well, it is a very tall building. Yeah.
This isn't a miniature, right? This is probably just a camera
on an
elevator.
This is a miniature.
Yeah.
This is according to the.
Then it's probably going sideways.
Yeah. According to the Cinefex.
And they're also obviously redoing it every time they wipe, you know.
According to the Cinefex, this was an 18-hour motion control shot.
Yeah.
I don't know why, actually. But I'm sure they had good reason.
Well, because it's all timed. I mean, it has to go a certain number of floors and then stop for the credit, and then it has to continue, and then it has to move on into the conclusion of the shot.
Yeah, so here it transitions
and there's
into
an actual... Wipe
that is a very impressive transition thing they just did in terms of
timing. 94. It's like, again, a motion control shot? Why didn't they just use CG? Well, because it was the better way of doing it.
I did have a couple of moments watching this where I was like, why didn't they just... Oh, right, because...
Because it's 94.
Because exactly. That's not going
to
happen.
Now, you mentioned that we should talk about is you know, the you said we'll get to high concept. This, like I said, this is where I kind of learned, because I was just starting to think about writing scripts myself at this point, and so I was getting all the books and things like that, and the idea of high concept, and the idea of high concept is, what's weird is high concept counterintuitively means kind of exactly the opposite of what you might think it means. High concept sounds like a good thing. High concept is actually a very bad thing in its way.
Is it just a pitch for an idea?
High concept means I can tell you this in one sentence, and you will so get what the movie is.
Yeah, you will see the movie in your head. You'll see the trailer.
There's a bomb
Expendables,
on a bus.
But they're women. Oh,
there's,
awesome.
There's a bomb on a bus.
There's a bomb on a bus, and it can't go slower than 55.
That's where the X meets Y type pitch came from.
It's Die Hard in a building.
Yeah. Exactly. It's Die Hard on a bus. But the pitch of... It's a bus that can't. It's a bus full of people, and it can't go slower. If it slows down below in Los Angeles, and if it goes below 55 miles an hour, it explodes. And just like you come into my office and you say that sentence, I'm like, oh my god!
Yeah.
All we have to do is
I see the whole movie.
All we have to do is make that, not fuck it up, and we will get all the money.
Yeah,
and they did, and they did.
Yeah. What are other examples of high concept movies? Can you think of one off the top of your head?
Any
major blockbuster nowadays, you want to be able to...
Or, for instance, like maybe Fast and the Furious. A bunch of guys that race cars are brought in on a heist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bingo. There's
a high concept
pitch.
Yeah.
Usually, there's a hook that people... Okay, everyone knows that, or everyone's into that right now, and it's a story about blah.
Yeah.
So a high concept movie might be Man is Transported to Mars.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
I was kidding, but I guess it kind of is.
Here's a high concept movie. You know how everyone thinks the world's going to end in 2012? 2012. That's the fucking movie.
Gotcha. Now, doesn't
mean it's going to be a good movie.
Is there
because you think high concept means like, you know, it's about Jane Eyre and it's a whole thing about man's duality, the Jungian thing, sir.
It's not a conceptual movie. I see the distinction here.
To me, the term means exactly the opposite of what it should mean.
Yeah.
It's a low concept is what it is.
Okay, so stick with me here. There's a Valley Girl in Star Wars.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. There's your pitch.
Well, so I think that partially explains the failure of Speed 2, because we've been talking that...
That guy was in Twister.
Yes.
That one extra in the elevator was the one extra bad guy in Twister. He must be his brother or something, because he was an extra in both. Go on. Sorry, Seth.
No, no, it's okay. No, no, we were saying repeatedly that, wow, we completely forgot there was all this other stuff in this movie.
I love the
bus.
There's an entrance.
The unnecessary.
Talk about Ferris Bueller.
I've seen internet conspiracy theories that say that this car and them were literally dropped into the world by God at the beginning of the story.
And then this, I mean, this is pretty radical for 94. It's like, we're going to shoot this dialogue scene where the camera orbits the car twice.
Yeah.
Zing! Oh, yeah. You know, that's like, again, this is Jan de Bond going, you want an action movie? Here's a goddamn action movie for you. Even the dialogue's going to have action to it. And that's not necessarily the standard. It's the standard now.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Bay is going, oh, that's how we should do it. I get it. It was, you know, at the time, it was like, my God, movie, you're killing me here. Joe Morton, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I love Joe Morton.
For some reason,
he invented the Skynet.
For some reason, I thought that was Shaft. Just for a second,
it's the mustache.
Look at little he young just kinda, Jeff
he looks a little bit like him. Yeah, that guy looks like a pedo. So the book isn't the cover.
It's the mustache. It's the mustache.
Totally the mustache. And yet, Joe Morton pulls it off.
A mustache is a very it's an iffy thing. It's tricky to nail the mustache because you can either be fine. Like you're basically your spectrum goes from fine to awful, but there isn't a higher point. What should be neutral is really just the top of the spectrum when it comes to mustaches.
Yeah. No, but so I was saying, it seems like they took the high concept idea of this movie and rolled with it, forgetting everything that was actually in the movie. So it's like, the high concept pitch was, you know, action with the bus. So we're going to roll with that, completely forgetting the whole arc of the character and the multiple instances that we're dealing with him. And yeah, okay, we boiled it down a little bit too far for that one.
Yeah.
You're saying the pitch is too small for the movie?
For the sequel.
Well, the sequel.
Oh, the sequel. The sequel, if we're talking about the sequel, no, then
the sequel, the
dog's
pitch,
out.
The sequel, the pitch was clearly the title. Speed 2, Cruise Control.
It's
oh my God, it's a cruise ship.
Now,
I've
told the story. I don't know if I've told
it. It was off the air. Go for it.
Oh, okay, yeah. There's the Fox Movie Channel, which is not Fox News. It's where they show Fox movies. And I don't know if he still does it, but Tom Rothman, who is the president of...
For years and years, he was the head of Fox. I don't know if he still is.
He's the guy, I mean, he goes at least as far back as, you know, Titanic. He was the guy who was staking his career on Titanic, and I believe he still does.
I think he goes back to Die Hard, because I recall there was a thing that he wanted the explosion in the Die Hard building to literally happen in his office.
Yeah.
So when the Nakatomi Tower blows up, it's literally his office that's blowing up.
So he's the head of... He's the guy at Fox who, you know... Green Lights movies or whatever, and he there's a show that again I haven't had Fox Legacy on my cable system for a while, but he used to do a show called Fox Legacy, which is every Friday night he himself would do a little introduction of a classic Fox movie,
like Robert Evans introducing sports.
Exactly. one night it was Die Hard, in fact, and you know, whether it's not necessarily a movie during his tenure, but a Fox movie. But then he one night he did Speed, and he'll come out and see him in a soundstage, and he's, you know, hi, I'm Tom Rothman, and he does this little on camera thing, and he's a really cool guy. A lot of people like sort of hate Tom Rothman because of this movie or that movie, but he comes across as a pretty personable guy who legitimately likes movies, and you know, is trying to make good ones and trying to run a business at the same time. And he talked about one night the movie was Speed, and he talked about Speed and the making of Speed and all that kind of stuff. And then so he'll do a piece before the movie, and then they'll run the movie, and then he'll come back and he'll do a little piece after the movie. And so he talks about, and this is, you know, it's under his tenure, they made Speed. Speed was the biggest, you know, biggest movie they had that year, one of the biggest movies, a huge thing. Naturally, we're doing a sequel. They came up with this concept for Speed 2 Cruise Control, takes place on a boat. And he tells the story about, you know, this is going to be hugely expensive, and the whole cast and crew goes down to Bermuda or wherever they were, and they actually rented a freaking cruise ship to get the first day's shots of the cruise ship, you know, these wide shots of a cruise ship and all that. And he talks to the story about going to the screening room at Fox and going, okay, first day daily is of Speed 2, our next cash cow, yay, and sitting there looking at these big wide shots of an ocean liner just piddling along in the ocean. And he gets the producers on the phone, he goes, could the ocean liner go faster than that? And they're like, it's going to top speed for an ocean liner.
That thing's going 20 miles an hour.
Yeah,
sir.
Exactly.
20 miles an hour.
They're hauling balls in that ocean liner. And so, you know, he's like,
the Titanic never made it past 19.
Yeah. So he saw the Daily Sneak and he just had this crisis of like, oh, we're screwed.
Oh, shit. The thing that's supposed to be terrifying is going 20 miles an hour on open ocean.
The movie's called Speed, and I'm thinking, slow.
Yeah.
So, he just...
We are so bummed.
And not that 55 miles an hour is fast, but a bus in the city, that's fast.
Yeah.
A boat on the ocean.
And regardless of how fast it is, slow for a boat it doesn't look fast. That's the issue. It doesn't look fast because there's nothing to compare it to.
No parallels.
Howard Hughes is trying to film Hell's Angels. There's no clouds.
Yeah, no clouds.
You can't tell that the planes are moving.
Everyone's risking their lives. Right. So,
now, this whole dynamic that they set up between the two of them, for all of we've addressed repeatedly on the Matrix movies and also on Constantine, the Keanu Reeves thing, what's going on there, and we here might be, I guess, apologetically called apologists for Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, but we're sorry for it.
Yeah. I understand why people don't like Keanu Reeves, but he never doesn't work for me. I always find what he's doing in a scene, and I agree with it. Now, a different actor might handle it differently, but I never disagree with what he's doing. And it's never better than when he's actually bouncing off of someone else who... Sorry, Keanu, you seem really nice. It's never better than when he's bouncing off someone with charisma.
Yeah.
You know, if you put him and Jeff Daniels in a room, then it's like, this is a back and forth, and he's just kind of stoic.
Yeah.
If it's him by himself on screen pontificating, then it's like watching the Tree of Life. It's just, wow, Keanu.
But it's like the way it's written, and it's actually funny because Joss Whedon apparently did extensive work on this, even though he's not credited.
And Twister.
And Twister. But this one, actually, Graham Yost is the credited screenwriter, but even he says... Basically, all the lines of dialogue are Joss, and that's why this movie works.
Yeah.
Like, the credited screenwriter is saying he should have gotten credited because he did the dialogue, and that's why this movie
I structured
works.
It. I wrote the scenes. Yeah. Joss wrote the things that you think about.
Yeah. There are moments... It was funny because before I knew that, I was watching this, and there's the bit where he's talking about, in 30 years, you get to retire, and you get a handshake and a gold watch. And Keanu goes, cool, you know? And it's like, but he doesn't pull off that line. He doesn't pull off that line. But I was like, that sounds like something like we... And then later there's the moment where he's looking at looking at under the bus at the bomb, and Alan Ruck is like relaying everything he says.
Oh,
and he's relaying it word for word until he says, fuck me.
Fuck,
and he goes,
fuck!
Oh, darn. I was like, who... No. I went to IMDb. I was like, did Joss Whedon? And sure enough, he's like, his fingerprints are all over.
Not to overly date this, and hopefully the newsroom is around for years and years, but yesterday I caught up on all the newsroom to date, which is most of season one. Jeff Daniels really kind of hasn't aged. If this is 94,
he's a little puffier, but otherwise.
He's got a couple crow's feet, and his neck is about 1% bigger. Yeah. That's his 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
Jeff Daniels is our Samuel L. Jackson.
And actually,
white people.
Actually,
just accept the fact that he's never going to look old.
Well, Keanu's almost 50 now.
Yeah, that's...
Keanu's 47 now,
are you
I think.
Shitting
yeah.
me?
Watching?
Yeah. So he was in his 40s through the sequels for Matrix?
He was in his thirties at least. Yeah. He was mid. I think he was like 35.
Well, as we
Matrix.
Know, we have the internet. Keanu doesn't age.
Yeah.
Keanu's been around since the 1600s, and he is a vampire.
Seriously,
if you don't know what I'm talking about, Google it because it's really amusing.
Yeah,
there's whole things Cage. About people who are like finding old illustrations of characters and things, and they all look exactly like Keanu Reeves. Nick Cage has one, not as cool as Keanu's one, because Keanu's one is like almost compelling. It's like. Maybe he is.
Sort of my few quibbles about this action scene here is that every time they go to the crane, and the crane is like, you know, the elevator is like the crane is vibrating. It's like, no, it's under tension.
Yeah.
How is it vibrating back and forth when it's holding a heavy load?
That's heavier than it can hold.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just like I understand to create visual interest in the scene, but it's like the fact that it's wiggling, it's trying to get itself free from this elevator. Like,
in the chat, Ernest says that this year, this is 2012, Keanu is 48 and Jeff Daniels is 57.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm telling you fucking they don't age.
No, seriously, Jeff Daniels, you were saying like he's maybe a little puffier. I'm like, I think he actually looks kind of better now. I think he's kind of filled out more.
I've actually been thinking about that lately where I don't know how to phrase this in an articulate way, but it seems like women are really beautiful for the first 40 years and then it's really a super crapshoot later. But if a guy is kind of handsome at 20, he's going to be kind of handsome at 70. Yep. Like you kind of have, I don't know what the difference is or how we look at him. My only line of thought on that was that maybe a lot of the beauty we associate with women has to do with the way their skin is hanging on their face, and a lot of the beauty that we associate with men is the way that their bones are holding up the skin on their face, and the bones don't change.
It might be something like
or
that,
or something
yeah.
stupid like that, but I noticed that guys that are handsome young tend to be handsome late,
yeah.
and it's not necessarily the case with women,
yeah.
and I don't know why.
But you're a sexist pig.
Yeah.
Well,
it's true.
I'm sexist, but not racist, because black people are pretty their whole lives.
All the time.
All the from day one.
Samuel L. Jackson was 19, and then he turned 49.
Yeah.
And he's been 49 for the last 60 years.
That's how they do it. Yeah.
What is happening with that man?
This is a really scary scene.
It's a great scene. Yeah, you're waiting for some serious bad shit to happen. Yeah. And it's you know, talk about high concept. It's like it's a brilliant. I mean, you know, it's a scene you could have done 40 years ago. It's the concept works and it's very simple.
Towering Inferno.
Yeah. Towering Inferno didn't even pull it off as well. Yeah. But this idea of, you know, this whole thing of it starts up here, but then it's down, and it's someone's going to freaking lose an arm.
Cut the fuck in half is what's going to happen.
It's going to be some nasty shit. And then, you know, then you add the last little wrinkles, like, lady, sweetie, come here.
It actually,
you don't want to be mad at her, but you totally get it.
Yeah,
it's just like you see both sides. You're like,
when on falling, come on now. When on falling elevator, you are react the same. You might
right, exactly. You want to be like, oh bitch, please get off the fucking thing. But you can also be her and go, nope.
She hasn't seen the movie. She doesn't know how it ends.
Because all she's imagining in that moment is getting pulled halfway in, and then it collapses.
Yeah. Oh, God,
and then she is...
That's all I'm imagining, that whole scene.
And then she's that guy that Quint pulled out of the water in Jaws. Yeah, they're going to
get like half of,
gonna,
like
half night,
of her. Like, right?
It ties
and then
in,
they get 8 seconds to tell her, told you.
Yeah.
It ties in better towards the end where you get... So it's elevator, bus, subway.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So it ties in better at the end, but when I was younger, I was on an older New York City subway system. And
before they did the big old changeover?
Yeah, before they did the changeover, so it was the old doors. So I'm walking through, and I literally got stopped halfway in.
Oh, boy.
And the train started moving.
No, no!
So I'm there. My mom and my sister are inside. My dad's on the outside. My mom's pulling. My dad's pushing. And I'm going, oh, God, it's picking up speed. It's picking up speed.
Oh, boy. Just to wrap up the previous thing about ages, in this movie, Keanu's 29 and Jeff is 38.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I wonder, I guess there's no... distinction made when they're pairing up police partners about the age or anything like that. It just always seems to work out that way, I guess. It certainly does in movies, because you always want to have the sage guy and the new guy. But
they play it about the same
they
age.
They play like they're the same age. They're contemporaries.
They seem
not the
like
boss.
Contemporaries. They don't seem like Jeff is a year shy of 10 years older than Keanu.
Yeah, this isn't Lethal Weapon where it's
not seven,
I'm due for
it's
retirement.
Not
3 days to retirement. Yeah. Too old for this shit.
Gold watch.
Cool.
Anyway, that's terrifying stuff.
Yeah, no, that was...
I had that moment. Actually, I had that moment, but the more funny story is my dog had that moment, because my dog was in the passenger seat of my car once, and she had her head out the window because it was mostly down, and then she kind of rearranged herself on the side of the door, and she put her finger, her paw on the window up.
Oh, God.
And the dog was having this moment of ultimate betrayal with this moment of joy, and she's like trying to keep her head out, but then... I'm just over here on my side with the left hand, just casually trying to put the window down, but her fucking paw is still on the up button, and I'm like, Snickers, calm down, yo.
Sweetie.
I can control this moment. Anyway, it was, I had that moment too, but it's funnier if it's a dog, but I had that moment too, where when I was a kid, I got my neck stuck in a window.
Once. But yeah, so all I know is that has a... I have that in the back of my mind whenever I see scenes.
It was
like
a formative.
It's like,
this
oh
elevator
God,
scene
oh
taps
God.
Into a formative experience yes. that you had, where your body was going to get ripped in half by something.
The closest I have, I was on an elevator. I was getting on an elevator once, and the doors were closing. And normally, the doors, like, if they hit something, they're like, "Oh, okay," and they just bounce back
open.
Yeah,
you can just hold your hand there. It's like, "Oops, sorry."
I was getting on an elevator, and it closed on me, and but it was like faster than I expected. And it just went, "Well, bam," and it just stopped. It just helped. Like, I wasn't scared because I knew the elevator wasn't going to move or anything, but it was just like
shit.
It just kind of it was nothing. It was just it was more like, really? Because it just went boom and just stopped, like clenching my face. And I was totally like,
Michael's clenching his face now.
I'm like, is this happening seriously right now? So I actually had to like push it open, and someone was like hammering
the
on
elevator.
The
just wanted a hug, man.
Exactly. Yeah.
He was just trying to have a good day, man.
It was one of the weirdest things that ever happened. I was like, wow, okay.
In addition to all this fun stuff that we're talking about, there's also a really tense action scene happening.
Yeah.
He was lifted up by his nose.
He picked up Jeff Daniels by his nose.
I bet that wasn't scripted either. He just fucking did it.
That's true. Now, this is a trivia question.
Blue screen.
Yeah.
This is the only blue screen shot in the film, because
really? Well, it totally sold.
Yeah, because the that shot of him moving that the shaft is a miniature shaft. They could only build like so much. So to really get the sense of him moving through many floors of it, they actually had to do a motion control thing and shoot him on blue screen and do all of that. Now, but that's the only actual blue screen shot.
I'm pretty sure. I'm almost certain now that I think about it. We've never done a movie with Dennis Hopper before, and Dennis Hopper is a thing like Walken, like Ed Harris.
Waterworld we've done.
We did Waterworld. That's right. It didn't get released. No, I still have it, though.
We have done it, though.
I still have it. I can release it, I guess. But
we did like eight versions of Waterworld because it kept stopping.
Yeah. In fact, I think it was on Netflix, so pray to God. But Dennis Hopper brings his own thing to a character every single time, and he can vary. He is an actor, and he can do different things. But you can't change the fact that your personality has this weird kind of energy to it, which is why Walken is Walken and Keanu is Keanu and all those things. Dennis Hopper brings intense, half scary when he reads the paper in the morning. Yeah. He seems like maybe he's a total dick. Well, was a total dick.
He was apparently pretty smooth. He's actually a very smooth, kind of cultured guy in his later years. He's sort of like, "Hello, how are you? Good to see you." He sort of saved it for the screen.
Well, good, because I know who watching him in movies. They claimed. I like it. Remember the Nike commercials where he was like bootlegging a Nike shoe in the 80s, and he had these commercials where he was talking about the new Nike, and it's just him and a light on his face in a dark room talking about the new Nike. Don't tell anyone. And then he leaves, and like that was the commercial. That's a Nike commercial. This is Speed and Take Easy Rider. Pick a movie. Pick a role. Dennis Hopper is always... It's almost hard to imagine someone with too much charisma, but he is so intense. He is so in your face. It's almost like that guy... I love him. He's terrifying.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I love him. He's fine.
You're right. It's like poisonous charisma almost. It's like he's got so much, it turns into scary.
Yeah. But pop quiz hot shot.
Yeah.
He's a supervillain of charisma.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I have never not loved, I haven't seen Easy Rider, and I've heard from people that are of my generation, to say young people.
Don't bother.
The movie throws them. But the thing that tends to happen is people say, even those that get thrown by Easy Rider, Dennis Hopper is... fucking fascinating. He's a really interesting guy to watch, and I have to imagine what makes a person like that. What makes a Dennis Hopper? There's a million little calculations throughout someone's life about how they'll be, but Dennis Hopper is one of those guys that is that intense.
He didn't even appear on the scene in Easy Rider. He'd been an actor for like 10 years before then. I mean, he studied at the Actors Studio with Brando and that crowd. You know, he was like, you know, Mr. Serious stage actor man, with that whole thing. And then he comes out to Hollywood and he did a lot of Westerns, and he worked with like John Ford and Howard Hawks and John Wayne and things like that, and did TV.
I think a lot of that actually has to do, this intensity that we're talking about, I think it has to do with the eyes. Not just that you have them, many people do, but that you...
or I hope so.
Quite a few. Yeah. I've heard.
I think that most people...
At least one. Everyone has one. At least one.
I think that most people, in my experience... Sure, we'll say everyone. Most people, their eyes kind of tend to all do the same thing at the same time in a sentence. If you were having a conversation with someone about this, and it gets awkward at a certain line or a certain word in the sentence, you look away a little bit, and your eyes just kind of... Everyone's eyes kind of do that to different degrees, but generally the same thing. And I always feel like his eyes do the opposite thing. Every single time, you'd think that someone would be okay telling you this straight to your eyes. Hopper tends to kind of be looking a little away and kind of thinking to himself. And then as soon as you think that what he's saying is so awkward you couldn't look at the person in the eyes when you're saying it, he goes in for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something as subtle as that might be a lot of it. Now, obviously, he's also, for lack of a better word, he's evil chipper. He's charismatic and fun to watch, but I think a lot of it is just the way he connects with who he's talking to.
And there's very much an aspect of... not giving a fuck as well.
Yeah. He could have been the Joker.
Like he would. Oh yeah.
Oh.
He would like because
that's
Dennis Hopper is
that,
not
that would have been that would have worked.
Yeah.
That totally would
Hopper instead of Nicholson.
He is not afraid to chew the scenery, and so he just goes for it. And
but it doesn't seem like he is. It seems like Dennis Hopper, not the character. Dennis Hopper in a conversation with you would chew the scenery.
yeah. Exactly.
Michael, this.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, hey boy, what's up?
Yeah, pop quiz.
Like, that's actually who he is.
Yeah.
And I think that Keanu Reeves is actually who he is, for the most part. I'm sure he's an enlightened and fun guy. I'll bet you he just talks that way.
He's just very chill. So it's, I imagine he's just very chill, so when he's playing someone who's not chill, it's kind of difficult for him to push out of that.
Well, I've of the three people, of the three main characters of the thing, I've... Dennis Hopper's the one that I never worked with, but I have worked with Keanu and Jeff Daniels. So, you know, so.
When was Keanu? Oh, my God.
Freaked,
right.
Which he did just before this movie, I believe. I think
Jeff Daniels was Martian, right?
My favorite Martian, yeah. So briefly with Keanu, and, you know, he was around on set. And yeah, he's not anything different off camera. He's exactly what you think.
He seems like a sweet, nice dude.
Hey, you know, he is, you know, Bill and Ted was, you know, that's not acting, that's casting.
Right.
you know, he's like, hey, how you doing? What's up? How's it going?
Did you,
what's up?
You must have, because you were actually on set for all of Martian, right? Doing all the spacesuit stuff.
Yeah, with Jeff, yeah.
Did you?
Jeff is, you know, Jeff was our co-star.
What was the read? You know, without going too into it, I guess. What was your read off Jeff?
It's really interesting. Going in, I had totally different expectations of coming out, because the three main actors that we worked with were Jeff Daniels and Christopher Lloyd and Daryl Hannah. And
Which are known for being big.
Yeah. I knew Jeff Daniels was. I certainly knew, because he'd had a lengthy career even by then. Martian was like 99, I guess, including Speed, among other things that he'd been in. And of course, you know, Christopher Lloyd, are you kidding me? You know, it's like, Doc. So Jeff Daniels had
Marty.
Only a few years earlier, this year, had done Dumb and Dumber. One of the things I remember is we had a lot of kids on set, you know, just being extras and stuff on My Favorite Martian. More than once, I saw like a young kid go up to Jeff Daniels and go, "I just want to say that I really like Dumb and Dumber," and he was always very gracious, like, "Oh, thank you very much.
Nice to meet you." And yeah,
that's that movie where I had the explosive diarrhea. Could have ended my career.
Which, but, for an actor, is
yeah.
a little...
Yeah,
I'm
but,
glad your parents showed that to you.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you're 8 and you've seen that movie.
It's like
somehow.
When you go up to the Rembrandts and say, "I loved the Friends theme."
Yeah. yeah, I'm sure.
Oh.
That's right. But he was... Jeff Daniels was consummately professional. It's not that he's unfriendly. It's just he was there. He did the work. He would like, "What would you like me to do? Should I be here? And then I should look here." And then, okay, so a 3 count, and then I'm here. Like this, all right, let's do that. And then, you know, just totally there to do the work, professional, boom, nail it, and, you know, away he goes. And totally willing to do whatever. I mean, he does a nude scene in My Favorite Martian, for fuck's sake. And it was kind of like the director kind of came up with it, like, so he could have rewrote the scene. It's like, but, you know, Jeff would do a nude scene. He was like, yeah, all right. So,
just,
you know,
a pro.
For My Favorite Martian, he does it, you know, he'll do a nude scene, for fuck's sake. Yeah, totally, that's my experience of Jeff Daniels, totally professional. Just jumping back for a sec, this is Venice Boulevard. This is, you know, because you got the clown statue right there.
Yeah.
The fact that they blew up a bus right there on actual Venice Boulevard freaks me out.
And actually a kind of impressive proto Children of Men shot, because he comes out of the cafe as the
thing's
blowing
away. And the thing is driving away and explodes.
You just associate with cafes and film.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of the same kind of...
Yeah. I know, you're right. I was just making a joke.
So anyway, the Jeff Daniels is, again, my experience of him is just he's a great actor who, you know, obviously can do a great many things, and just a great, you know...
Accessible, but not a
complete pro on the set. No drama whatsoever. Just a good, you know, hardworking actor. And the same for Christopher Lloyd. The surprise with Christopher Lloyd, of course, is that Christopher Lloyd is not manic and crazy and entertaining.
I met that guy. I was stunned.
Christopher Lloyd is like, you know, an art history professor in real life.
Yes. No, it was... I mean, Brian's told this story probably on a couple of movies, but I met him once at a New Bev Revival Theater screening of the Back to the Future trilogy, and the more I learned about Chris Lloyd, the more I'm like, oh my God, he was there that day? Did they pay him $200? Like, why did he come? But it was a moment where I am truly, and everyone says this, but I'm truly not the guy who goes up to celebrities and says this, that, the other, but I was in line for popcorn, and he was behind me, and it was a long line, and I turned around and said, you know, it's, you know, I know you know that I'm here, so I know you, and I, you know, cool job, and I'm glad you're here, and can I get a picture, and I'm sorry? And he was like, oh, yeah, sure, that's no problem. And we took a picture, or someone in front of me, basically the person in front of me in line was mad jealous, but I handed him my phone and said, can you take a picture of us? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure. I'm sure he was just happy for the opportunity to look at Christopher Lloyd for a second, because everyone in that situation is going, don't look at him. Don't be the guy in L.A.
It's
pervasive how much L.A. is centered upon celebrity, and yet most people are really modest in the face of it.
He's just here for the popcorn, not for me. Don't look.
Right, exactly. But he took some picture of it, and it was just this moment where we only had 15 or 20 seconds together, and in that moment, it was very much a, oh my God, you know, it's great to see, you know, I would love to get a picture with you if I could. I didn't even go into the whole spiel about, I never do, no, I just, I'd love to get a picture with you if I could. He's like, oh yeah, that's fine. I'm just waiting for popcorn at this point. And the conversation was, I'd love to get a picture with you. Oh, yeah, that's fine. We can do that. Can you hold the camera? And the guy's like, yes. And he's like, all right, move into Heather a little bit. And I'm like, all right. And Chris is like, all right. And then we take the picture, and I say, thank you, Chris. And he's like, it's no problem. Not, it's no problem.
No, it's no problem at all.
Now, the fun little postscript to that was, my phone did that thing that phones sometimes do, where I know for a fact this picture got taken, but it's not there. And it wasn't there for 18 months. And then one day, randomly, I don't know what happened.
It was there.
Suddenly, in my gallery, there was a picture of me and Chris Lloyd. And the second I saw it, I was in the middle of a conversation at dinner. I uploaded it to something else. Just get off my phone. If you exist for a second, I'm saving you. And now you can actually see it on my Facebook.
It was Quantum Lloyd.
A nano picture.
Yeah.
Trey has real stories about Chris Lloyd. All I have is the impression that Chris Lloyd is way more subdued than you think he is.
Yeah. It's all on the screen.
And what I've learned from Trey on a similar note is, you might think Christopher Walken is intense and scary.
Yes.
He is. Totally. That, you know, he really is.
Even worse in person, if anything.
He's worse on.
Because you don't know how the movie ends.
That's right. Is this the one where he kills me randomly?
You don't know if he's the dad from Blast in the Past or Max Schreck. Like, you have no idea.
Yeah. Am I in the comedy or the thriller? Oh, God.
I actually had that experience once. Not even with a real celebrity, but I was walking around like some office complex where I was working, and there was a guy who looked exactly like Bill Nighy, but like in a character, not just the guy. Like he had the slit, and he had like a sweater vest, and he was actually outside smoking a pipe.
And nice.
I was just hanging, and I was like, I literally like crossed to the other side of the quad because I'm like, I don't know what movie I'm in. and I know I'm not the star if Bill Nighy's playing that character.
Shaun of the Dead or Dead Man's Chest right now.
So I'm getting the hell away from him.
Alan Ruck.
I'm background. I don't want to be a supporting role in this film.
There are a whole, I would say, if it wasn't a movie conversation, I would say there's a cast of people. There's a whole roster of folks who, if you put them in a movie and give them any character and any lines, as long as they're not doing something really acty, just put that person in the scene, you'll love them. And Alan Ruck is one of those guys. And I've never understood what happens when someone who is like that gets a career and someone who's like that doesn't. Because Alan Ruck had several major big fucking ass movies. And it never really seemed to take off for him. And maybe it's a personal choice or changing different roles or just doing indie movies or whatever. But Alan Ruck seems exactly like the kind of guy who could have been the likable dude in almost everything. It weirds me out because every time I see him, I love him. He's been in major movies, but he's not in other movies. And maybe he just made a choice, or maybe he doesn't get cast. And if it's the latter, I don't know why.
Well, there's so many people on that roster. It's probably
there's a million people that are just likable. I mean, you know, you cast any of us in a movie and we're likable? Yeah. Question mark. But Alan Ruck is just, every time he talks, he's like, I like that guy. Right here, he's playing a doofus. In Twister, he was playing another scientist. And in Ferris Bueller,
doofus,
he was playing the damaged teen friend. And it's like, that's three different roles.
Yeah, he could have. He probably kept showing up at the same auditions with Norton.
That's true.
Ed Norton.
Yeah.
It's like,
wow.
Damaged teen?
Yeah, me too. He had that's crazy. He had Primal Fear, Rounders, and Fight Club of his own career.
Yeah, he could have done those.
Yeah, and you know. That is what it is. He showed up in an episode of Scrubs, and he was on Spin City for a million years. And most notably and most recently for me, his the last thing that I remember Alan Ruck from is from that episode of From the Earth to the Moon. He was cast as the guy who figured out how to do a lunar landing in the episode Spider from Earth to the Moon. There's a lot of Alan Ruck in the episode Spider if you're interested in Alan Ruck. I just like the guy a lot. And, you know, when you like someone, you want to see them work a lot. And I just hope that he's doing good. But I'm always happy to see him.
LA traffic.
Yeah.
Whereas Keanu Reeves get cast in everything. Like, what's going on in the world?
I'm impressed, like I said. And apparently that was not... that was him shattering the glass like that. He just ran up and fucking hit it, and it broke.
Yeah.
And he just kept
rolling. Yet another continuity problem. Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Great moment, but now we got this whole thing. Fortunately, see, that's kind of the... Well, you hope you're not shooting that out of sequence. So
right.
We've shot half the movie, and the thing is, you know, wasn't broken. Because that's so awesome that it's broken. If we did it in order, we could just break it and it'd be broken from then on. And but although I was reading the making of too, they went through like eight buses to do this thing. It's not just one bus the whole time.
The chat room is beating me up right now because we're talking about spotting actors and Alan Ruck. But John Pavlich says, so it's an intermission about spotting actors, huh? I'm like, ah, fuck you. And then Jimmy B says, just fun fact, Alan Ruck was 30 in Ferris Bueller.
Yep.
Okay, never mind.
Amazing? How about
mind
that?
Mind blown.
Wow. All right, never mind. Yeah. Fuck me.
How about that?
And Carrie Fisher was 19 in Star Wars. Everyone go to hell.
That's right. Now we have what's his name? Glenn something, I think, is this actor here. Who
the bus driver? Oh, him.
No, the guy with the car. He got paid a lot, I'm sure, but you know, they worked him into Speed too, where he just happens to be on vacation, yeah. and they steal his speedboat, and it's oh my god. So Speed 2 is just conceptually, but the whole movie itself was ineptly made, and then the final icing on the cake was Keanu refused to do it, so Sandra Bullock just has a different boyfriend now, and then right. Somehow it's the whole thing. So it doesn't even have the tenuous Die Hard, like, why does this keep happening to us? It's like, why does this keep happening to you?
Yeah.
But do you, like me, have the impulse to think of a third movie in the Speed franchise that's literally the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead involving the guy with the car and
oh,
the guy?
Yeah.
It's like, his life is fine. He's a real estate guy. He does his job. But then every couple of years...
every couple of years, someone steals his ride, man.
Someone takes his Jag and rips off the door. World. Someone goes on the cruise and it's just...
Somehow he's an extra in every action movie. Yeah. What happened
but
to
I think
his
that,
life?
When I see that actor, I just think of it. For me, his most iconic, he's been a lot of things, but his most iconic role is Jericho 1 from Strange Days.
Yeah. But
2K.
I mean, also, what I was saying is, you know, look at this. They're just blazing down the freeway, yeah. Man. They
and by the way, they must have a pretty lucky day
again,
on the freeway.
This is 94. Yeah. There's rigs and things, but yeah. These things you're looking at on screen are happening.
Yeah, they're not on a green screen putting that in the background like they would be for a lot of the bus stuff would be on a bus on a gimbal in front of a green screen, and they'd be adding that stuff
like
later.
Source code where they just we don't have to be on a real train, we'll just do green screen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I do really like that moment where he's yelling, "There's a bomb on the bus," and he's like, "Okay, well he'll hear me better." There's a bomb. Wait, what?
is that what we're doing?
In the chat, Xtroid says, combine Alan Ruck and Alan Rickman, Alan Ruckman. And then Jimmy B helpfully points out, or Alan Rick Ruck.
That is the other way to do it, yes.
That's terrifying.
Rick Ruckman.
That moment totally works.
Huh? That moment works even though it's completely 70s Towering Inferno with the zoom and everything. Yeah. It's just my God.
Bomb on bus.
Yeah.
We haven't really talked about Jan de Bont really particularly yet. We talked about
in the Twister commentary.
Jan de Bont was
is his first movie.
DP. This I believe is his first feature.
Yep, and first directing.
Out of the park, man. Jesus.
He shot Die Hard. He shot Basic Instinct. He was a cinematographer.
Worked
for
with Verhoeven in a lot of movies. I think he shot RoboCop.
Yeah,
pretty sure he shot RoboCop as well. Didn't shoot.
He shot Lethal Weapon 2.
He did shoot Troopers. I think.
I'll check.
Oh, no, Jos Vakano shot Troopers. Jos Vakano, because Jan had moved on to directing. So
I'll stop checking.
Yeah.
Now Nate the Great's like, Alric Manruck.
Oh, dear.
He's going to be, okay, that'll keep him busy for a while.
Yeah.
So Jan de Bont had been a DP, and as we mentioned this in the other commentary, but, you know, DPs can be great directors. Some don't ever want to be directors. Some have no
Fincher
interest.
Fincher was a DP for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Well, he shot commercials, but wasn't he also a DP?
He definitely did camera. He was an effects camera guy at ILM.
Yeah, I think that's the extent.
The only thing that you're guaranteed when a DP directs a movie is that it's going to look great. And some of them have picked up more and more the circles around their particular field. They might have gotten more and more depending on how much they've noticed. Like, the next thing you're likely to get are people who can direct scenes well. And then if you get all the way to a guy who can direct a movie well, that's a guy that will stick.
Makes the transition, yeah.
Now, bear in mind, that's all the case, and we'll take it as read that perhaps that's mostly true. And then you get, you know, not to cast aspersions, but Michael Bay.
Right.
I don't know how that happened. That's like the 101 Dalmatians on the top 10 movies of all time list. Like, what?
Yeah.
Moment, but sure.
It's that class, you know, it's... You've picked up what was your core craft, and depending on who you were interacting with, so maybe you were with someone who talked to you about, and you were able to pick up a fair amount of knowledge about the other aspects of the craft.
Or you could have
just been that guy who, no, I'm here, I want to do my gig, and out the door, not really converse about other things. And so, yeah, you don't pick up all that extra stuff.
Ooh, Speed is the movie that taught me what's in those.
To this day. And by the way, if you drive past them on the highway... they're actually labeled in numbers. I think the numbers are gallons.
Ah.
Because the ones up front will say 25, the ones in the middle will say 50, and the ones in the back will say 75 or 100. Mm. I think it's gallons of water in them. Makes so the sense. First ones collapse fast. The last ones will slow you down, but they don't collapse fast.
Right.
Hence the varying in splashes. I didn't know there was water in them until speed.
Yeah, exactly.
But apparently there's water in them.
I always thought they were full of high explosive. just to make you keep you on your toes.
So did Michael Bay, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, they're full of nitro, right?
Someone in the city's department is going, guys, I like the water thing. I see where we're going with that. Can there be nitroglycerin?
Yeah, just a little nitroglycerin.
This is an interesting beat. The first time I saw this movie, I hadn't been living in L.A., and I thought it was contrived and awful. But
but now I'm in LA.
But now you know.
But now I'm like, the fact that this guy has a record is one thing, but the fact that a random guy on the bus has a gun and thinks that something else is going on doesn't seem that far-fetched.
No, it really doesn't. I saw a really fascinating thing online where people were talking about their experiences traveling to foreign countries and learning from the locals what the locals think America is, having never been to. And someone was talking about it in Brazil. And Brazil, you know, I tend to think of Brazil as being a fairly sort of, you know, firefly kind of atmosphere. It's a wild and woolly place, you know, the jungle, and there's, you know, aborigines with poison darts come at you in Brazil and all that kind of stuff. Maybe it's not so much that, but I think it was Brazil. Someone said that all his friends in Brazil just believe that everyone in America carries a gun and has been in at least one shootout. we all have literally been involved in a shootout at some time.
I've had conversations with people on the forum, like, for instance, Dave in the forum.
There are some Americans who think it should be that
way. Yeah, well, you know, that's their utopia. Yeah.
I like to think that I have and didn't offend Dave. I have the relationship with him to just ask him a question because he's an Australian. And I said, is it weird that Americans get tremendously little information about Australia on the whole through the popular media? And Australia and many other places in the world get a tremendous amount of America, not just from the news and shit that, you know, the president elected, that kind of shit, but like movies, the movies are all from America. Does that taint it? He's like, he stopped me right there. He's like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. And those conversations about expectations and understanding get a lot more uncomfortable when you're on the America side of things. And it's like, we're watching movies too. It's not like we're watching our culture on the screen. We're also watching movies.
Yeah, we get our own impression of ourselves from our own movies.
Yeah, bear in mind, if you live in Britain or Scotland or Russia or Brazil or Australia, Americans are watching American movies too. It's not like we're watching movies.
They're the stories we tell about ourselves. I just saw something recently that many other countries in the world, as far as our, you know, we're heading toward a presidential election right now. A lot of other countries in the world are like, why are they even having an election? I mean, that's not even like a choice. They're actually acting like this even matters.
Yeah.
Like that other guy is gonna even win the election. It's like, how would they possibly, you know, nominate anyone other than, you know,
the whole world's
you finally got a good president, for fuck's sake.
You're on an upswing.
Yeah, really. It's like they're just going through the motions of having, they're not really going to elect the other guy now, right? Because they already had a douchebag like that. And he ruined the world. So here in America, it's like, oh, it could go either direction. It's like, it really shouldn't go either direction.
It shouldn't, no, but it's scary.
Yeah, even for all of that, this is one of the quintessential American movies.
Well, what you were saying
is L.A.
Yes,
American.
It's very L.A. And like you said, you know, your impression before you came here was like, you know, that it was far-fetched, but having been in L.A., it's like, I can totally see it.
I've actually personally had moments in my life recently, living here, where I was terrified by the people following me in the alley. And it wasn't because it's who they were. It's because how they were talking to me at the time. I'm walking 30 steps ahead of them, and they're screaming at me, "Hey, white boy." I've had that moment.
That's a tip-off.
Yeah. I've had that moment. I went to Subway once, and when I was coming
behind the counter, sandwich artist, "Hey, white boy."
No. When I was coming
out. What do you want, white bread? I mean, do you want white bread?
I was at a gig. This is in Hollywood. This isn't even in South Central or Compton or one of those places you might associate with more volatile cultures. I was in Hollywood, and I went to the Subway, and I came out, and there was a full-on half-gang fight thing happening between 8 or 10 people over on the right side of the parking lot and 8 or 10 on the left, and they're throwing things at each other, and glasses breaking at my feet, and it's... L.A. is not like this. L.A. is like this. You know what I mean? It's one of those sort of things. It's there. It's not invasive. It's not endemic. At least where I go, I guess.
Yeah.
Not
all of the garbage cans have fires in them.
Yeah.
But every single one of us has seen a garbage can on fire.
Yeah.
On the other side of it, I saw an image floating around the internet where it was, use this when you talk to friends who aren't from L.A. And it was, this is L.A., and this is five other major cities that cover the same landmass as L.A. It's like, it's a big place. Yeah.
It's huge.
All right, L.A. is as big as Delaware.
That's what, you know, whenever people somewhere else see, like, a, you know, there's wildfires in L.A., like, are you okay? Yeah, they're 50 miles from me.
Yeah.
Right.
The fire has to come through downtown to get to where I am.
If there's a wildfire in Manhattan, problem.
Yeah, they don't evacuate New Jersey right away.
If there's a wildfire in L.A., everyone's fine.
Yeah.
That's how big L.A. is.
Yeah.
And it's funny because that reminds me
of... So one bomb on a bus, we don't even close the freeways for that.
Fuck that. I have to get to
work. I got shit to do.
Producing Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
They did a thing with that with the nuclear reactor in Japan, because everyone's freaking out. It's like, oh my God, it's going to blow up Japan. Yeah. And it's like, it's not close. It's not close to where there were people in Japan.
Bear in mind, Japan isn't huge.
Yeah. There were people in Japan blogging being like, it's not near me. It's not. No, just because I'm in Japan,
I'm
it's
good.
Not near me.
We're fine.
That said, one of our own former guys, Harbin, was living in Sendai right when the wave hit, which was interesting to get that perspective, because I remember getting an IM from him, like, massive earthquake, and I live in L.A. My response to that was to not even
bitch,
say...
Bitch, please.
No, as callous as it is, and as awful a person as I am, I literally didn't reply to the IM. He's like, massive earthquake. I'm like, Didn't even, like, I wasn't even going to go, okay. Like,
You still got internet. Can't be that bad.
And then 2 hours later on the news, there's water 200 miles inland.
Yeah. See, that's when you capitalize the M.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway.
It's like a bastion.
We're talking about L.A. on a commentary about speed, which is actually appropriate.
Which is like a little travelogue of L.A.
It's not fair to the movie. Every scene in this movie is tense as hell.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because every scene reasonably leads to the next one. It's like, okay, there is a problem. We have to solve it. We have solved that problem but caused a new one that now has to be solved.
And now we have this problem, and now we have that problem.
I think this is an example of, it was the time, so it had to be done practical, but I think because of it's all on location and it's all a practical bus, the viewer gets to feel
you're on a bus.
I could see this happening. Yeah. This isn't some spaceship. This isn't even like Die Hard, as real as it is, gets a little bit out there with what's going on. This one, it's like, I've been on a bus. I've been on a road going down like that. Oh God. Oh, you know.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day,
that's right back to the high concept. It's like, sit there. You can just sit in your car and just imagine. Okay, if I was on a bus and I could not stop, what sort of shit would I have to deal with?
A certain thing about speed that is there, but not as
in L.A. In L.A. is really important.
It really
part
is.
Of that.
The setting is actually very important.
A thing about speed that is there, but not as prominent in Twister, is that, with the exception of the elevator front half and the subway back half, everything you're seeing in speed with regard to the bus, you could actually be watching Flight 93, the movie. You could actually imagine that this had actually happened and you're just watching the shitty movie they made about it.
Yeah.
It seems that plausible.
Yeah.
That, I think, even if it's not a real thing, weighs on you in the way that, I'll say, Apollo 13 doesn't have that going for it because it seems so unlikely.
Well, and it's so outside of
you don't watch Apollo 13 and go, that could happen to
me. Not even to me, just in general. A quadruple failure in the LEM. What? No. What does that mean? But bomb on bus?
Yeah,
you know.
Bus with a bomb on it?
I get those words. Bomb, I get. Yeah. Bus,
exactly.
I get.
It's like,
what the hell? You
know? Bomb on bus can't stop lots of cars.
If in 2011 they had made an explicit and deep and well-produced film about someone walking into a movie theater and shooting everyone, nobody would have the "that could never happen" reaction. And in fact, 2012,
right?
And it's the same thing with a bomb on a bus. It has that exact same vibe of, this is not without the realm of possibility. This is, I can see this happening. This just kind of feels real to me.
Yeah.
And that should be something that goes into the thought process behind picking out new summer blockbusters, at the risk of terrifying everyone on the planet. Find something that's bomb Disneyland. There's your movie. Like, that kind of shit. Because every time I go to Disneyland, I just look around and go, there's 600,000 people here today. We're going to die. We're going to get bombed. Someone's going to get mad at America and bomb Disneyland. It'll be a great statement. It'll be totally effective. No one can stop it. And I'm the guy that's going to get bombed today.
It's a great Tom Clancy book that focuses on a counterterrorism squad, and one of the big set pieces is terrorists taking hostages in a Disneyland-style park. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, don't stop doing that.
But Tom Clancy, even though I haven't kept up with his, you know, last 57
yeah,
books.
Yeah, no, I haven't either.
But, you missed a couple months, huh?
But is it, yeah, I missed a couple months. Now that he's a franchise. But is it Some of All Fears, or Some of All Fears. That's the one with the Super Bowl, right?
Well, there's the Super Bowl. The one I'm thinking of is the one that essentially had the jetliner piloted into.
That's a later one. That's the one where.
Executive decision. I think.
That one's weirdly prescient.
It ends like that, and it's like, oh god.
Yeah,
no.
that's whatever that one's called. But the one before it, I think, is Some of All Fears, where terrorists are building a nuclear bomb to blow up the Super Bowl, It's been a movie and everything else, and the movie did it, but it was kind of disappointing. But they could have gone, but shockingly, and it works. Tom Clancy amazed me. Like, they do it. It's about the Super Bowl, and a nuclear bomb goes off, and it's awful. And I was like, ballsy move, Mr. Clancy, to put that in your book. So you know, the idea of I can totally picture these things happening. When I look at this movie, you know, I just start thinking in my head the logistics of it. I'm just like, this movie, they literally are driving across all of Los Angeles. They're being fairly geographically accurate. You know, they're skipping around a little bit. But
this is more or less what happens.
They're moving from neighborhood to neighborhood, and they're on the freeway. Now, they had a real advantage, and that, you know, maybe one of the things that helped greenlight the movie was the 105 was almost built but was not open yet.
I was hoping you'd go into this. The 105
The 105 freeway, which is now a main thoroughfare to LAX.
Yeah, it takes you in there from the valley.
You know, and so they are being geographically accurate. The 105, if you take the 105, it ends at LAX. It terminates at LAX. But the 105 was under construction for a decade, and at the time of this movie, did not exist as a working freeway in Los Angeles. In fact, when I came back from that trip in Japan, I experienced the 105 because I got off the plane and I got the taxi cab, and I said, I want to go to, you know, I lived way up in the valley at the time, so all the way from LAX to the valley. I said, okay, the valley, and I've come from Japan, I'm really jet lagged. And suddenly we're driving, and he's like, starts taking off east, and I'm like, what the hell are we doing? Where are we going? Because the 105 had opened while I was out of the country, and we're on a whole new freeway. LA has a new freeway now that I'm experiencing for
and
the
Trey
first time.
Is tired and
jet lagged.
And
I'm like,
had
I'm being,
like a Kahlua on the plane.
I'm
he's
being
like,
kidnapped.
Do you promise me right now, mister, that there is not a gap in this freeway?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Do you
on?
Swear to God that we're not going to do a jump?
Yeah. So
if that's the case, just go.
Anyway, all I'm getting at is you know, that in addition to the fact that all this is practical, and they, you know, they spent God knows how many weeks driving a bus, towing a bus, you know, shooting 57 different angles of the same people on a bus, talking and having conversations through different neighborhoods, not to mention all the, you know, stunts and skidding and turning and all that, you know, happy stuff with the bus and helicopters flying around. Just logistically, this is a huge, huge movie. Ooh. To put together, even though it seems small by today's standards, it is not a trivial movie to make. And the other thing that really is interesting about the movie is, again, I was putting myself in the position of, okay, if I was making it, what sort of issues would I have to be dealing with? The fact that Jeff Daniels and Keanu Reeves are now in two different movies and will never meet again. So there's now the Jeff Daniels movie. There's the
Solve It.
There's that one going on. So half the time you're shooting, you know, for 3 weeks we're going to be sitting in a bus and driving at 90 miles an hour, and then for 2 days we're going to be shooting Jeff Daniels in an office, and I have to make that interesting. And then we have to go spend a day shooting Dennis Hopper looking at televisions. And make that interesting. And then they're all going to pretend to call each other, and we have to make sure all those conversations sync up and work as one cohesive sequence. And that's the kind of movie making that you know, can make you crazy as a director, to try and coordinate all that.
That's got
to
be some interesting call sheet organization.
Exactly.
But yeah, like you were saying, you watch this movie, and you know, in a post-Transformers world, you're like, pfft, whatever, like logistically,
it's a baby's toy.
But
yeah,
and especially, you know, again for the time, I'm surprised. Oh well, or maybe it was, and I just wasn't aware of it. Was there any like, oh man, they're gonna fucking fall so flat on their face with this bus movie, like around the industry?
I wasn't really that in the industry. I mean, I was in Japan when the movie was coming out, so I wasn't really aware of the buzz at all.
My thing with changing topics to Sandra Bullock now.
Let's.
My thing with, I have a complicated opinion about Sandra Bullock, but I think it actually boils down to presentation in the last 6 years, not necessarily her whole career. Just recently,
I don't think that.
Ooh. Not even that. Although that, but not that.
Yes, that.
I don't think the world media and entertainment media have the ability to distinguish between people that we love their work and we love them, and also gorgeous superstar that, you know, ingenue thing. And a lot of the problem that I've had with, and I have had, Sandra Bullock in the last few years is that I don't buy her, me personally, as the Julia Roberts. I don't buy her as the super endlessly attractive, glowing bombshell super actress. Not that I don't think Sandra Bullock's attractive, but more, Sandra Bullock is really outstanding. She's really a very good actress, and she's very funny, and she's very likable. I don't find her attractive myself. Only, you know, I would love to be friends with her, but not like hot attractive. And when the world is telling me not only this, but also that, I actually kind of repel myself from it a little bit. And I'm more likely to say, nuh-uh, in tandem with all the other statements they're making. Just to that one little thing where it's this. I'm looking at this movie and I'm going, I love her. But if you put her in an Oscar dress and say she's our next this, you know, I think of Sandra Bullock as a character actor. I really do. And I've seen her lead movies, but I see her as someone who is better for me in movies being this character really well, but not she could be the everyman woman. Does that make sense at all, or am I off on a weird tangent?
Kind of a weird tangent, to be honest. I think
that's fine. Like I said, I don't actually understand my opinions about Sandra Bullock. But
you just try to articulate them, and that's good. Yeah, you no, come to fine. The right place. It's good. Just get it out.
I'm
not saying it's bad.
I'm trying to figure it out.
A question.
Stream of consciousness.
I'll tell you this. Yeah. That was the conclusion I drew. Here was the input. I like Sandra Bullock. I think she's really good. The world is telling me that she's also XYZ leading lady actress thing, and I have some sort of repulsion to that. Yeah. Everything prior to that was just trying to figure out why, but that's what's going on in my brain.
I think, I'll say it, I actually think she's prettier than Julia Roberts, for what that's worth.
Oh, bear in mind.
I would go there, yeah.
I would like to say this. Pretty woman, pretty woman.
Yeah.
25 years later.
Mirror, mirror.
Scary. Scary.
Wicked stepmother.
I'm sure Julia Roberts, if not is, has been a really wonderful person.
Yeah, apparently so.
But I don't find her attractive.
Yeah,
but she does have leading lady quality.
Sandra Bullock still looks great.
I mean,
great.
You know, we were just leveling about the fact that Keanu doesn't, or no, not him. It was Bill Paxton.
And Twister.
So no, that is fair enough.
Now, what's crazy is, and this is basically you're hearing Teague experience cognitive dissonance, because Sandra Bullock, I've seen her carry a movie, and she can carry the shit out of a movie. But that also isn't synonymous with leading lady in my brain.
Sure.
Where it's like a leading, you know, Tom Hanks is a leading man.
Right.
He can be a character actor.
There's a glamour
he can be a leading
associated
man.
With it.
Yeah, but,
maybe.
You know, Tom Hanks has he was cute 25 years ago, but he's just kind of a guy now. He doesn't look like anything now.
There's an extra charisma
that's needed.
But
it's just a personality thing.
Yeah.
And Julia Roberts has that, for better or for worse, in my estimation. And Sandra doesn't, even though I actually think Sandra's probably a better actor, and not to mention, although important to my life, I think that I would like Sandra Bullock a lot more than Julia Roberts at a party. I have this thing where I can't figure out what it is, you know, call up Gladwell, that makes me think Julia Roberts is a more palatable person overall, even though I think I actually like Sandra about twice as much.
Hmm.
It's just something that's in my head. I love her in this especially, and as she's done more and more stuff, I've liked her more and more. Miss Congeniality, you know, it's kind of a shitty normal summer comedy, but I liked her in that, and I like that movie.
It's a solid movie. Blake Snyder will tell all about it.
But let's set aside.
Directed by the fellow who directed My Favorite Martian. As a matter of fact, that was his next movie.
Interesting. But $100 million
at the box office.
Where I'm getting at is just I love Sandra, and yet I don't feel that Sandra is for everyone the same way that I don't love Julia Roberts, but I feel like Julia Roberts is for everyone. Does that make sense at all? That's just a weird.
It's
a cognitive dissonance
thing. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, after this movie, of course, you know, then she became an instant overnight leading lady, and they put her in all kinds of movies, some of which were more successful than others. Like, you know, the next was like, I don't know if it was her very next movie, but it was The Net, which was kind of okay, yeah, not so much. But then, you know, she did a number of good roles, and then ultimately, you know, got herself an Oscar. Not for what I thought was her best role, but, you know, you often don't get the Oscar for the actual good work you've done. You get it the year after when they go, we should have given it to you last for that other thing, but so do something we can nominate you for, and we'll give it to you then. Go ahead. Also known as the, you know, the Al Pacino. Yeah. We'll give you an Al Pacino award. Son of a Woman, whoever. Yeah, that's a classic, right? Nah, not really. But those other things were, so we're giving you an Oscar.
I realize I just put us on a hole, but do you guys have any insight into that? About the way that someone can just be perceived in a movie differently than someone else? Because I love Sandra. But then I'm like, I don't think Sandra's for everyone, and I think Julia is, even though I don't like Julia. It's almost a Justin Bieber thing. It's like, yeah, you're popular, but I don't feel you that way. Yeah.
It makes me always respect the casting director much more than when I'm not thinking about that.
They're the ones saying, yeah, there's something here that's not there, even though I can't really put my
finger on
that.
This is the one you
that.
Want.
It's the argument that you guys brought up with the Harry Potter. It's like, whoever they had casting that one nailed it. Yeah. I mean, they were thinking... Like
they're thinking 9 years older,
six steps ahead instead of, and you get the movies where it's like, they're the big name, we'll throw the big name in there, or, and then you're like, yeah, but it's not working, and yeah, that's probably a good reason why.
There's a movie. This is totally down a rat hole now, but there's a movie called Finishing the Game. Which is about. It doesn't sound like it relates, but it just reminded me. It's about a production company that's trying to complete Game of Death after Bruce Lee's death.
Okay, I heard about this.
And
yeah.
So it's not a documentary; it's a comedy film. But they're running auditions and stuff like that for the new Bruce Lee. You know, basically just the body double, essentially, for the most part. But there's this one guy who is like, he comes in and he's like the worst actor because they're supposed to be like. There's the line, you offend me and you offend my family, and everyone's pulling it, and he's like, you offend me, you offend my family. Like, he's the worst, right? But the casting director keeps pushing this guy, is just obsessed with him, and she's like, he's just got this like Gene Hackman quality to him, and everyone's like, what the hell are you talking about? And so they move on from him, and the rest of the movie is about the disaster of attempting to make this movie with the people that they do choose, who seem good in the auditions, and they do the best, but it all falls apart. But the punchline is at the end, they're showing, you know, they show the things where it's like, so and so went on to blah 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 blah, and he had the illustrious long career. Because he totally, like, basically shadowing Gene Hackman's career. He was like the Gene Hackman of China or something. And she completely called it. Like,
it's like the thing with, was it your dad or something? Dustin Hoffman?
Yeah,
it's
my
like
dad used to.
Anyone but him.
Yeah, my dad used to hang out with his actor friend from school who came out here and became a character actor. Not a big star, but was a character actor and made a perfectly good living. But he had three roommates. Robert Duvall, Gene Hackman, and Dustin Hoffman.
God damn it.
And my dad would,
that's
know,
a sitcom
my
right
dad,
there.
Yeah, they're sharing a house. They're all aspiring actors.
They're all great. Well, not Dustin.
Yeah. And, well, my dad was like, yeah, you know, Hackman seemed like an okay guy. You know, Duvall was probably, maybe he was going to have a career, but that Hoffman guy, forget it. Never going to happen. Jesus
cut
Christ.
Cut to Meet the Fockers.
Cut to Hoffman being the first one to become famous out
right.
of that crap.
Yeah. Graduate and all that.
But so you never can tell. I met a guy years ago who talked about being in acting class with Stallone and how he's still his palm is still permanently attached to his face going, how in the hell did that guy become a big star? I was in acting class with him for frick's sake. So we're coming up on a rather major moment in the film. Yeah. But
so far this commentary has been everything but speed.
I will say that Joss Whedon kind of peaked his head up again in the quick moment where Keanu turns to the big guy and calls him Gigantor.
I think I've seen this written down somewhere, but I don't know if it's true or not. But then Gigantor's actual name is Ortiz, which is Keanu's name in Freaked, which is the movie he'd done just before this. Keanu's character's name is Ortiz, the dog boy, the Mexican dog boy. So I was wondering, like, is that a coincidence that that guy character's name is Ortiz when Keanu's last role was Ortiz, uncredited in Freaked? I was just also, again, talking about logistics. We just had that, you know, very nice scene with Sandra Bullock being upset that the lady had gotten blown up, and you know, and they have that thing, and she's crying and all that. And I was looking at the coverage of it, and again, it's all practical. It's pre-blue screen. And outside, you know, on his angle, there's a flatbed truck loaded with cops, and on her angle, there's a cop car making pace for them. It's like, it's hard enough to shoot a dramatic scene in a living room and get the coverage, you know, in the time you have. It's like, what if, okay, Sandy, I'm going to ask you to play this very dramatic scene while we're buzzing down the freeway at 60 miles an hour, and there's some guy in a cop car. It's like, what do I do in this scene? Just keep pace. That's it.
Don't fall out of shot.
Until she nails it, that's what you're doing. So, oh, God, please, Sandy, get this in before lunch at least. You know, we're using up more gas than a 747 just to get this crying shot. So here we go. The famous bus jump scene.
Oh, my God. Are we there already?
Yep.
Yeah. We're about to jump it.
We're an hour and five in.
This movie moves.
There's 50 minutes left.
Yeah. But it's that is the other thing, because like you said, they're not on the bus much longer.
You remember 50 minutes of speed is how it boils down.
Yeah. So now a lot of you know, internet bullshit's been, you know, made. You can possibly do. Yeah, it's a movie. So okay. They
and in fact, you can see in the only wide they use in the sequence, you can see that the bus comes off at like a 45.
Yeah, it hits a ramp, like boom,
there it is.
It pops up.
Yeah, sure.
A ramp. Oh yeah.
And then clearly, because it's a freaking bus, the tail is gonna land, you know, and this is a separate setup, and you know, all that kind of stuff. It's like, it's a movie, people. Mythbusters has done, I think they did two episodes trying to do this bus jump, and you know, could not even come close to approximating this kind of a bus jump.
Well, that's Mythbusters thing, you know, replicate the conditions.
Yeah, and then try to replicate
the results.
I think they had to RC it, so the problem is they couldn't control it. As I recall, they wrecked it. They kind of got it to kind of jump, but nowhere near the 50 feet supposedly claimed in the movie.
They did the jump, and then they did the kind of tilt up on one side by shifting the weight of the passengers.
Yeah, they did do that. Yeah. They tested that. Can you make the turn, you know, if everyone... How fast a turn can you make if everyone goes to the side?
Without rolling.
They actually tested that.
You can make a 1% difference.
It actually did make a difference. There is a measurable difference. You can make a slightly faster turn. So yeah, the physics of speed.
Who knew? And if you know LA, just looking out the background there, it's like, yep, that's right outside LAX. They're
in the right zone. And we're about to move to the third act of the second act.
Yeah,
basically, which is how a lot of people say you should structure a second act. Yeah. Is that it should have its own structure because it's generally considered your largest act, and obviously the bus is the biggest contiguous act of the movie. So yeah, the idea of like, go to the airport, big empty space, drive in a circle. It's like, you know, the movie's been taking us there the whole time. So in this case, the high concept is working for us.
Yeah. And again, just occasional, you know, quick things. It's like, yes, it totally makes sense that they drove backwards over that thing. And that will
and that's the next complication.
Yeah, that will cause serious complications later. Just the way that the tire starts to you know.
And also the next move they're about to do with this freaking cart, which still like gives me the heebie-jeebies thinking about it. It's brilliant. You know, he's gonna stab, you know, stab the gas tank to get out and lead to the next complication. That's just good plotting, ladies and gentlemen.
It's hard to generalize to the point that you can actually make rules about how movies are working, but I think what I've learned after all these down in fronts is simply keep making sense and keep making everyone
fuck
themselves. Yeah. Every single time you make sense, good. Now, what's wrong with that? Have that play out. So it's literally keep making sense, keep getting fucked.
Yeah. Once the problem is solved and you have created no new ones, that's the end of the movie. So to keep moving forward into the movie. And sometimes, you know, that can be one of the problems with thrillers nowadays, is that it'll raise a problem and then they will solve it. And then you have to move to a next separate problem.
Yep.
And then solving that. But it's like they raise it and solve it immediately. Yeah. There's no sense of flow.
And actually, you get a very herky jerky kind of movement.
Well, that's something that's always
plot.
It's very start and stop. That's why this one is just going the whole time.
On the subject of structure, the only thing in the world that hasn't been covered more than Star Wars is nothing. And there's still something about Star Wars that always screws me up, because there's a moment at the two-third, three-third break of Star Wars where everything's fine. New mission starts. You got everyone back. Now go kill the Death Star. And I never understood exactly how the tension works.
Well, everything is not through that moment. There's a Death Star.
Yeah, no. It's a resolution of the
it's a false
resolution. The small problems. Yeah. But the big problem remains the big
problem.
And
they tie it by saying, oh, yeah, we're tracking them. And we know where they are. So there is that bridge with, it's not just
it turns
a new
out that,
problem,
yeah.
it's the...
That whole rescue mission was actually what enabled the Death Star to now threaten
so,
the
rebels. The Death Star then becomes, it's not just, this could be a mistake that a movie made today might make, it's not just the Death Star is out there, we should go deal with it, it's the Death Star is coming here, it is a ticking clock, we have to blow it up before it blows us up.
And it's coming here because you let it here, even though you had the best intentions and you did a lot of heroic things, but guess what?
Yeah.
So, this movie just keeps building and building and building, and, you know, another one that I think of is, you know, Aliens. It's like, Aliens isn't just, oh, the reactor's going to blow. Well, the reactor's going to blow because we crashed our freaking landing craft into it, which made sense at the time because we were trying to leave, but that didn't go well, and that's led to our next problem. So again, that's actually a very good point. It seems very simple, you know, but it's amazing how easy it is to miss when you're writing a movie, and some movies do it, where it's like, here's a problem, well, we solved that.
Yeah.
Oh, the phone just rang. You guys, there's a new problem. Oh, good. We better go solve that one now.
It's also a good heist movie, usually, if it does it well.
Yeah.
We'll roll into that.
Absolutely.
We've got our plan, and things start cascading either right or wrong, and it's that cascade of action that drives you through it.
I just rewatched Ocean's 11.
I was going to go exactly
a little
there.
While
yeah.
back,
yeah.
and that is a perfect
and
example.
And Brian's been saying it for years, and all credit to Brian, who's not here today, but he's been saying since fucking Jump Street. The thing with Ocean's 11, and it's really watchable because you love all the characters and the banter is fun, but at the end of the day, the structure of that movie is every scene. There isn't a scene that is exempt from this. Every scene directly points to the next scene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even if everything's going well, something's going to go wrong, and the next scene is about shit. Every single scene, it's a series of arrows going towards the end of the movie. Wow, okay, that seems so simple to say. Go, write it. I'll wait.
Yeah.
It's tricky. It's actually, you know, the joke that I always have made for as long as Brian's been saying Ocean's 11 is amazing, the joke I've been making is, screenwriting's easy. Tension is hard. Tension is hard.
Tension is one of the, it's especially hard on the page. I mean, it's really hard to write tension and have it come across to the reader, and, you know, that's a whole other topic.
To mention, it's hard to get the executive to think to be reading it in the right frame of mind.
Yeah,
so this whole movie will work.
This whole scene where nothing happened. It's like, technically, yes, nothing happened, but that's because it's supposed to be tense.
Read six pages on.
This is freaking nuts.
Yeah. And
he's doing that.
Yeah. You know,
Keanu, you mad bastard.
The difference between, you know, this and Cruise Control, like we said, you notice in most of these shots where they're just talking or hanging out or whatever, there's shit flying by the front of the front of the lens, or there's, you know, they put up these orange cones so that at all times behind Sandra Bullock, anytime there's a shot on her, you can see this stuff whipping by behind her.
Yeah.
So, that's how they're creating this sense
in
of
fact,
speed.
If you
push that parallax.
If you get the DVD of Duel, which was the TV movie that put Steven Spielberg on the map and got him his first feature after that, he talks about that where, you know, it's about a guy being chased by a big truck, and he said he learned that in shooting it, one of the great breakthroughs was always put the truck against a rock face or something, because you could drive the truck at 20 miles an hour, but as long as you're tight on a long lens and it's got something in the background to blur, it feels like 90.
So
it's like when you're shooting a cruise ship, you know, on the open ocean, you can't put mile markers for it to be buzzing past to tell you how fast it's going.
Yeah, and there's also the issue. I haven't really been paying attention to it because I hadn't really thought about it until like just now. But
look at this shit.
Yeah, that's for
Jesus.
Real. That is for real. And
this is the benefit of him not being a huge name actor, or the insurance agency would say no.
He's not quite big
enough. Sorry, you want to put Tom Hanks on a Western dolly under a bus at 55?
Yeah.
No.
However, they just hung Tom Cruise off the bridge, and they really did it.
Yeah.
So
what was the thing that you hadn't appreciated until just now?
So, yeah, sorry about
that. It's okay. I do that all the time. So,
welcome to the show.
The idea that, like I said, I wasn't really paying attention, but I wonder if they... they're very careful to kind of frame it out the sides for the same reason, because it's much more difficult to get a sense of speed going backwards or forwards down, you know, down a road for that reason.
Just because things move slower across screen.
Yeah.
Right.
So I imagine that they've probably been very careful to design the shots mostly that those directions and not forward.
Out the front and out the back are wides, so things move faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably a good point. Keeping things moving is tricky. I mean,
yeah. But in a movie called Speed, you better fucking do it.
Yeah. that's kind of the promise you're making. Yeah.
And bear in mind, if you're making a sequel, bigger, faster, harder.
Yeah.
Speed 2?
Bigger.
Daytona.
Kind of slower.
Daytona. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Speed 2. You can't stop this Indy car.
Yeah.
You can't stop. No, all of them.
Yeah.
All of them are wired.
Go, give me one more sentence. I'm a sentence away.
And Sandra Bullock is pregnant.
That's the high concept. No, that's the high concept. That's the one where the guy goes, sold. Give me that. Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah. I'll give you act two, act three. Our lead favorite guy's tires pop.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, shit, right?
Go on. Yeah.
Right? Yeah, where do you go?
You see where I'm going with this, right?
Go on, pit crew.
Then you need his buddy in the other car to get behind him and keep jamming him forward and trying to steer at the same time at 190 miles an hour.
And see, it's easy to shoot because we just get a racetrack in the off season and we don't have to block off streets. We're just always on the thing the whole time.
It's cheaper.
Now, this is just this little subtlety here is just a nice little touch. Sandra Bullock she's in command now. She's given orders. She's you do this, you do the thing. She's the driver now. It's just a nice little thing. Stepped up.
There was the touch where she's like, get your ass behind the yellow line.
Exactly. She's taking control. And again, just little character moments.
Oh, and there it was.
Oh, yeah.
There goes your diesel fuel. It's a shame. Now, this is one of those natural gas buses.
Why can't this be a solar bus?
Huh? Yeah, that's right. We have until dark to get this taken care of.
Yeah. That was another thing
stuntman.
You can kind of forget, but this is almost taking place in real time. Because he says got until 11 a.m., and he gets on the bus at 9.
Yeah, it's not even lunch yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Although it is kind of sunsetty in the lighting, but other than that. See, there's just a little nice little, Ortiz, the workman, he's got the tools on his belt so he can get this panel open. Again, just screenwriting is easy.
Screenwriting is easy. Tension is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Screenwriting is easier if you're allowed to do something like that. If you're allowed to go back. If you're working through it and they're like, they got to get that panel open. Fuck it. I'll make one of the characters like a workman and you just go back to the beginning of the script and
screenwriting is easy if you're not doing it on your first try.
Yeah. And screenwriting is easier if you're not trying to do it while they're shooting the movie, which is so often the case now.
He's got Chekhov's tool belt there.
Yeah. So. There's if they hadn't thought that Ortiz needed a tool belt and they'd already shot a bunch of his stuff, they're like, we're just bummed.
That might be it. Earlier I said, what's the difference? 2005. I wonder if it is just that there has been a more recent trend in deadlines.
Compressed schedules.
Yeah.
And you get to the point where you can't.
Was this movie a spec, perhaps?
You can't.
Because it feels like a spec.
I think it
was.
Yeah.
It could have been, certainly.
Feels like a pitch.
But it makes you wonder if maybe just the difference between modern tentpole blockbusters and even 15 years ago tentpole blockbusters is just you can't have the time to go back through and fill out the world a little bit more. And then you finish out, here's the plot. Got it. How can it be stronger? You never get that step.
Well,
if you're writing and directing the Avengers at the same time. Yeah. Joss is the only guy that can fucking pull that off, we'll say. But at the end of the day, Battleship, pick one. Any of them. Transformers 2. At the end of the day, you have to be able to go back through and make a movie out of it. And you can't if you don't have time to go back and go, how can I make this stronger? Okay, fine. Now the movie finally works. Go. No, wait. I have to make it stronger. No, it's fine.
Well, we've talked about many of the factors.
There are already people building sets.
Yeah, we've talked about many of the factors. One is the compressed schedule, and another is, they'll often bring in, another is the Cowboys and Aliens syndrome, where you have 10 good writers who are all trying to write 10 good but different movies that don't, the pieces don't come together. In the end, you have no one has the vision of what that freaking story was supposed to be about.
Crystal Skull.
It's Crystal Skull, and it just becomes a bunch of scenes that don't seem to connect or lead to anything.
They kind of go in order, but they never touch.
Yeah. The interesting thing about this movie is it really doesn't have any thematic
resonance
at all. No, dude, it's just a fucking
bomb. It is purely a thriller. It's purely an adventure ride, but but
this is just a good season finale for a great procedural show.
Best episode of Breaking Bad ever.
Yeah,
it's really well done. Now this is actually, I have to say, this sequence is kind of shocking. I was kind of surprised that they went this way with it. Like, wow,
especially the rather heartbreaking shot of Jeff Daniels the second.
Yeah, going up, I blew it.
Yeah,
oh, and I'm gonna die now.
And you know, Blake Snyder, if he didn't cover this movie, he would call that the whiff of death. Not that we haven't had enough whiffs of death in this movie, but you know, this is the ratcheting up the tension. Like, oh, it's on now, motherfucker. You know, reason for Keanu to redouble his efforts. Like, oh, I'm so gonna get this guy now.
It's always interesting to see, in like the vein of the heist movies and stuff like that, the episodic shows that take those concepts and run them through decently successfully. I can think of two series that do heist movies. There's Leverage, that's currently airing on TNT, and then there's Hustle, which is a British series. And it's that classic thing of, on a weekly basis, they have to come up with these plots, and it is a quicker turnaround. Or you get the ones that are much more the action procedural that have to deal with something slightly different, but yes, on a rote basis.
Yeah.
And it's like, you guys, I have deep respect for the writers on those projects, because it's like, you're doing, yes, it's some repetition, but you're having to be inventive. It's one of the issues one of the reasons I've heard that, like, Sherlock takes so long to come out with a new season, aside from the fact that the actors and the production side is very busy with lots of other projects. It's, they're doing three almost feature-length movies that they
three
have
feature-length
to,
good Sherlock Holmes movies?
Yeah, that
time.
They have to plot and conceptualize all the way out.
Yeah.
I watched a great series with Alan Davis from QI, Jonathan Creek, and it was all locked room mysteries. And it was essentially one guy wrote all of them, and, you know, he was the creative force. And he's always asked, you know, are you going to do more? It's like, it's so
not
hard to come up with this story
that
you can watch. And
this
kind
is kind of
and,
difficult.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's, you know, again, we've talked about that in other episodes we've done. Like, you know, like the news, like HBO does it so well in more of a British model, where it's like, how long is the season? 10 episodes. 10. That's it.
Yeah.
10. So, you know, 10
Trey,
episodes.
Can you episode 11? Could you just add one more?
Just throw one more. No. Did you not notice how episode 10 ended? It's like, either we're going to do a news story next time or we're done. That's kind of designed that. You know, the newsroom is, you know, 10 hours. That's five movies.
Oh, yeah.
The season of The Newsroom is five movies about those characters. You know, it's like, it's no picnic to be engaging and keep that interesting and so on. And that's why, you know, good television writing is all the more respectable, like you said. I mean, people who actually can crank out, even whether it's a staff or whatever, but, you know, any group of people, they can crank out reasonably entertaining hours of television 22 times in 6 months. You know, it's like you're making 11 movies. You have to write 11 movies in the space of time that one movie normally wouldn't even
one be, bad movie would get.
One bad movie would have more time to get made in. So yeah, good television writing is actually kind of more of a miracle than good feature writing in many ways.
It's odd that, you know, these days, and it's been said before, but we're not living in a movie age right now. We're living in a TV age.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the reason. I don't know how the circumstances arise such that you can live this out, but TV episodes are harder to write, and when they're written well, they seem better.
And you have a week.
And everyone is
you got a week to write it.
Everyone on TV is bringing it much harder, and, you know, I guess it's just influences. But in movies, different story.
It may also be the way the process. I mean, they have writers' rooms. They have a staff of writers.
Yeah, every show's different how they do it.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, they don't all write each episode, but normally they'll sit together, they'll hash it out. So it's, you know, all the kind of all the brains working on the one problem, and then one specific writer or two, you know, a partnership or whatever.
They'll refine it down.
Actually go and write the script, but it's like you can run through that development process much faster because you have so many more minds on.
Aaron Sorkin says, thanks for the research, bros.
Except for him.
Yeah.
Except for him. Yeah.
Yeah, you get, mind, it runs the gamut.
Newsroom is a writer's room show that Aaron does the final pass on.
I think Stephen Moffat, when he does his episodic stuff, he largely writes all. I think he wrote all of Coupling. I could be wrong, but, you know.
And
some
sitcoms are entirely room written, and the way that it's literally just someone's turn to get their name on the episode so they keep their Writers Guild membership. But no one is the single author of some sitcom episodes. It literally is entirely the room.
This week, the bowling alley closes. What are they going to do?
Ready and go around the room. Okay, and Bob, you get
what
credit
if
for this
there's,
one.
What if the bar does longer hours, but then the barman has a problem?
So we're actually we're you know
episode 201.
We were talking about the structure of this. It's like, well, they've made it to the airport, but they're still on the bus. And there is still one more back and forth to play. It's kind of interesting that it's kind of come in so late, but the idea of, you know, the give and take of they've just figured out finally after all this time he's watching us, that he has a video feed of the bus. No wonder he's always one step ahead of us. Now we have to defeat that. Because we have the ticking clock of the fact that we're about to run out of gas and we're all going to die. But we have this, it's not just that. It's like, now we have to do it without him knowing it. We got rid of the TV helicopters, and now we have the next complication.
Sure, yeah. Now, I have two things. A is minor. I always loved and have always loved and love it more now, this beat where they just ask the tech that's with the news crew, yeah. Can you do? And he's like, fuck yes. I've been waiting for my job to require me to think yeah. for the last... I love that moment. But my bigger thing is this. I wonder if, and consider yesterday...
three-quarter-inch tape. Oh. Look at that.
Consider yesterday and consider tomorrow. In the state of the American culture, what makes movies like this, I don't think you could make Speed this year, and here's why. A big part of why I think we like Speed is, as much as Dennis Hopper is evil, he's fun to watch, and we're not rooting for him, but we're like, oh fuck, what's he gonna do next?
He's you want to see them beat him. He's hard to beat.
I don't think, just not even necessarily in terms of taboos, just culturally, I think we're less receptive to stories where you like the terrorist these days. And I can only think of one exception to that, and the problem is that exception is almost overpowering, but it's the Joker. I think we tend these days to be less receptive to both sides of a terrorist operation.
We couldn't
have a movie like Speed now.
We couldn't have an Alan Rickman in Die Hard today.
We couldn't have a Dennis Hopper in Speed, and though it happened yesterday, we can't have a Heath Ledger in Joker, and that's what unravels my point. But I wonder how much reticence any sort of studio would have to saying, yeah, that we'll do that now. I think they would go, nope, no, they're evil, they're coming at us, that's all. I think that's how movies get made.
Yeah, there can't be a charisma to the villain.
You can't enjoy the scenes that the villain's in.
But I think you can point to exception, as we've said many times. The villain has to make sense. Right. I mean, the villain, yeah. We've always said that, you know, a villain is like, I'm evil. Aha, notice my evil laugh is you know,
well, could you
literally
imagine
a cardboard character. Not that they don't have those in movies sometimes, but
maybe this is the wrong direction to take.
But you're talking about an actual likable villain. Well, where you kind of go, I kind of like that guy.
Well, but specifically in a terrorist situation, just to extend this to the Gary Larson far side of the argument here, it'd be like, I pause it and let's discuss. It'd be like having a version of the movie Flight 93, the Greengrass film, where you also see the conversations that the terrorists are having.
You see the conversations the terrorists are having in 93.
And you kind of like them.
Yeah. That's the movie. That's 93.
I need to see it again then, but
93 shows that they're indecisive. That the reason 93 was delayed is that the passengers even had a shot was that the terrorists were scared. They didn't want to pull the trigger and do the mission. So
then I'm totally wrong.
Yeah.
I love this bit here. This is like as Michael Bay as it gets. It's like the wooden plank is throwing sparks everywhere.
Yeah. Well, it does have a metal.
Oh, does it?
Okay. It has a metal rim to it.
It just looked like it was wood. I'm like, are you serious? That's awesome.
That's right. And then it explodes.
Yeah.
Pavlich touched on an interesting point in the chat. With regards to that previous thing I was talking about, with regards to understanding and sympathizing with the people who are clearly doing awful things.
Sure.
And how we've become, as a culture, more gun-shy about things like that. He says, there's also a small part of you that understands why he, in this case, Hopper, is so upset. I wonder if maybe what I'm tapping in on is just we're less likely culturally by any number of a thousand different ways to end up with a film that says, here's their point.
I think the last one I can think of that did that well. I mean, this one did it super on the nose, but Syriana,
yeah,
was Ooh, very yeah. a lot Syriana, of people yeah. a lot of people, you know, and back in the culture that was, and still kind of is in some areas. There were, well, it was very, you know, it was anti-American and blah, 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 because...
How dare you?
Yeah. It was because it was sympathizing a bit with terrorists. It was being like, look, this is how... It wasn't saying that they're... It wasn't saying what they're doing is right. It was saying, this is how they get made.
Yeah.
This is how these people are created.
That's a whole other argument where it's like, you're not, you know, that's being sympathetic to go, they don't grow like mushrooms. Yeah. I mean, there is a culture that creates them that, that, you know, and here's how that comes
There's
from.
There's a cause and effect that has led them down this path.
Yeah.
I love the move here. I mean, the idea of the getting off the bus is this whole little rig with the rope and, okay, we're just going to lie in the, are you shitting me? Look, we're just going to do this. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
Just to wrap that up, having just made that point that Mike just made, I now actually see a distinction between Dennis Hopper and the Joker, which is that the Joker isn't against any sort of thing. He's not against politics. He has no theme. He has no politics. Hopper is making a point about the way the world is.
Yeah.
Joker is making a point about people.
Yeah.
We can get, maybe, I surmise now, we can get along with the point that's more, people are like this and that's fucking stupid, and it's kind of fun to see a guy who's anti that. Hence Tyler Durden. If Tyler Durden didn't have Martha Stewart to shit on, he'd have something else to shit on. And same with the Joker. Hopper has a thing. He's making a point.
Right. And there's also fact that the fact that Fight Club does not necessarily agree with Tyler Durden. You know, but
it glamorizes him pretty hard, though.
Yeah, well, but it at least shows the counterpoint.
A lot of movies and TV shows, it's all on the portrayal. If you're on the nose with it, you know, and you say, okay, it's about Muslims, you know, then everyone goes, oh, no. You know, it's Star Wars, as we've said many times. Star Wars is about a kid who joins terrorists and blows up a government building. I mean, you know, it's like he might as well, you know, because of some freaky religion. And so, you know, that's what that's about. This movie, you know, you could. And surely there are movies that'll do it. You know, police corruption is a trope that people love to use. You could make this movie almost from the point of view of Dennis Hopper's character and have him be the hero.
It's a 99%.
Have him be the hero story of the movie. Totally. You know, it's like Inside Man is that movie.
Yep.
You know, it's like it's all in just who you make the sympathetic character. You know, Battlestar Galactica did a whole thing where they did a whole season where they made you sympathetic for Iraqi terrorists who, you know, blow up the occupying army by making them the sympathetic characters.
I wonder,
do you see what we're doing there?
I wonder if we're actually likely, might happen, might not, but I wonder if we're actually likely in the next 5 to 10 to get movies that are more about the terrorists. Not because we're fantasizing them or romanticizing or anything like that, but just because the farther the United States culture goes into this extreme of where it's going, the more you start to disagree with it, regardless of your standing, and the more you think it's kind of bullshit the way they talk about it. We're going to get to the point where people want to see movies.
Regardless of your standing
point is, mm-hmm. we're getting to the point where it's like this. People, even people who are kind of gung ho, are going to get to the point where like, this is kind of bullshit. What's going on? And we'll be more and more interested in the stories of the other side of things.
So you get that. You'll get that.
I think we're actually, as a culture, kind of jumping the shark.
You're talking about specifically, because again, I say that despite, you know, after 9/11, it's like we'll never enjoy another movie about terrorists again. That's right. That's why we burned all our copies of Star Wars. It's, you know, people don't get that connection. People don't understand that us versus them is entirely dependent on who you are. You know, them is the people who aren't you. That's the only difference. You know, America has done some heinous, heinous goddamn things. But we love them. We love movies about how wonderful we are. Well, you know, they make movies in other countries, too, where we're the bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's all in perspective. The stories are the stories. There's good guys and there's bad guys. The movie tells you which ones are which, and that's who you're for.
You could argue that might be an influence in the resurgence of the supernatural and really, you know, big monster movies. Because it's like, no, those are obviously different and wrong and not us. Yeah. And you can skirt that issue.
Exactly. They're clearly we're better than that, so that's fine. So, but to, you know, to bring it back to what you said is I don't think it's unusual, and I don't think it's something we have failed to see in recently that you know, a charismatic bad guy who blows things up is fairly standard. John Travolta's played it about 3 times in the past decade. Yeah. He's played that character. You know, so that's one of the things you do. It's like, well, how do we make our villain more interesting? Well, let's cast a really charming guy who normally doesn't play a villain. Oh, yeah, okay, that's good. Like, let's do that.
What about Unstoppable?
Yeah, there you go.
I didn't see that one.
I didn't either. I just saw the trailer, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's what you're talking about.
Well, but Unstoppable is an accident. That's not a terrorist thing.
Oh,
it's,
okay.
It's just purely an accident. Sure, bring up Tony Scott. Let's bring the whole thing down, yeah. Man. Jesus Christ. But
sorry.
Yeah, Unstoppable is an accident. It's not a terrorist thing. That's a force of nature.
Is that the one with John Travolta? I'm thinking of John Travolta on a train.
Pelham.
Which one is that?
That's Pelham 123.
Okay, then that one. Yeah, that's the one.
That's
I mean.
Yes, there are terrorists in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Unstoppable's just the runaway train.
It's the runaway train.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes they run away by themselves, you know. They don't have to have a bad guy.
They're bored and they just want to go for a ride.
Yeah. So Dennis Hopper is it's good casting that he's just charismatic. But as you said earlier, it's like Christopher Walken could have and would have played just as well. Where you go, oh, I totally get it. He's got a point, but he's still fucking nuts. He's still crazy. They need to do a movie now where Keanu Reeves plays that guy.
Wow.
Oh, wow. That's
Is it time for Keanu Reeves to play a bad guy? I say yes. I think Keanu Reeves should play bad guys now.
I think our previous supposition about what makes a villain work is right on the money, but incomplete. I think you have to have a guy who has a point but is crazy to have a really compelling villain. You have to have a guy who is an unbalanced individual who happens to be right about his viewpoint.
You get
a guy who is compelling enough that you believe what he says, but you're also compelled because he's fucking nuts and kind of scary.
Well, it's the whole thing about reasoning correctly from incorrect premises.
Yes.
That's what that's insanity true. Kind of
There's
is.
There's that. You know? I think I don't know if being crazy is necessarily the case, because I don't think Hans Gruber is crazy. I think
is the operative.
Yeah, yeah. The issue is you understand their point, but they go to a length that you think is that they shouldn't have.
They're driven.
That morally, you know, that you go, I see what this guy is about, but I wouldn't have done that. That's wrong. To go about it that way is wrong. So you can go, Dennis Hopper, I understand. You got cheated from your, you know, my thing. The police department didn't treat you well. However, blowing up a bus full of innocent humans is not the answer.
Yeah.
You
know, that's, repeat Gruber, so, repeat operative, repeat yeah, syndrome, exactly. repeat that's, all of them.
And they don't have to be crazy for that, but they do have to be, you know, they have to have crossed a moral line that you go, I see your point, and yet you are still bad because you are dealing with this the wrong way.
So the trick to a good villain is counterpoint, accurate counterpoint, inaccurate execution.
Yeah, and it's the same with and you could, except in our current intellectual climate, it's a harder road to hoe. Is Syriana? You can go, wow, I totally see what it's like to be a young Palestinian man. No wonder you become a terrorist.
Yeah,
you know, but we, you know, societally, we're still not ready to kind of go, oh, I totally get that. That makes total sense. No, they're just evil. It's like, you know, they're evil. They're created by, you know, a system that does that. But we, you know, just we're emotionally
just
we're not ready for that specific piece of information.
That's created by a system that allows us to be annoying douchebags that talk on a podcast about films.
Yeah.
It just kind of happens that way.
And there are many who see us as villains.
That's called privilege.
Hi, my name is Teague. I'm white.
Yeah.
So we're into the third Speed movie now.
Yeah.
Speed 3, which is great.
And Dennis Hopper is still bringing it, and Sandra Bullock is still bringing it, and Keanu Reeves is still doing the best he can.
Yeah.
It's really good. And I have to say, when I was watching the movie the first time, that the economy of it and the fact that it takes so little time to go from, yay, we're off the bus, everything's fine, what could possibly go wrong? Literally, and in a way that makes perfect sense, and you totally get, and you know, you don't say, oh God, everyone had to be an idiot for that to happen. She's the prisoner of Dennis Hopper, like a minute and a half later screen time, and you go, well, yeah, I guess that would happen. Yeah, that makes sense. And we're into a whole other series of escalating jeopardies.
Pre-lunch in the Speed.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
It's just about lunchtime. Maybe we'll get some lunch after this this act.
Yeah.
This is the movie format of 24, where it's like, wow, you had a really busy day, didn't you?
Yeah, that was a long day. I don't even know when you went to the bathroom. And it's nice about the movie that, in retrospect, you know, without explaining it all, in retrospect, you can see Dennis Hopper's whole plan. You know, it's like his office was in MacArthur Park the whole time, looking out at MacArthur Park. They showed us 10 looks out the window of MacArthur Park. So his plan the whole time was to put the ransom in there. He's already cut the hole. He's going to step out of his little lair, and he's going to get the thing and walk out. You know, it all makes perfect sense without having to sort of, you see, what I did was this. And yet it makes sense.
Yeah.
ask us.
But he just couldn't resist fucking with Keanu, and that's what rolled.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's like, oh well, but now
it's too much fun. Yeah, I'll ask us this then: is there something that Speed does wrong? Is there anything that you guys are like, that's not right for this movie?
I don't believe LA has a subway system.
We do.
I know. I've just never. they
it's
made
not
this,
this
up.
Nice.
They made this up. That's
it,
what they did. Yeah. Wrong.
It does feel a little bit.
It only goes from Hill Street to like two blocks down.
It is a little weird to be off the. And I understand it's a false resolution and stuff like that. But pacing wise, it does feel weird to go from the bus to the subway and be like, we have another. And the other thing, I guess, is. I don't know what else you would do, but I always have felt a little bothered by kind of the simplicity of Dennis Hopper's death. Like, yeah. he's just dead suddenly.
Oh, you should have ducked your head there, bro.
Yeah, it's and you know, there's something to be said for, you know, that's life, and it's fucked up, and you know, just because he's the villain doesn't mean he can't be taken out by getting his head knocked off. But
maybe it's because we're conditioned to it now. You almost want just. A little bit more thematic resonance than that. It's like, oh, if only he learned that one lesson. The one thing he didn't foresee was, you know, that there was some kind of. Although it does give, I think we can, you know, maybe it has a whiff of Joss Whedon. Is, you know, it does give Keanu the opportunity.
He lost his head.
I'm smarter than you. Yeah, but I'm taller.
Yeah,
that feels like a Whedon line to me. If it's not, it ought to be. I like this little, you know, this little exchange here too. So he's like, okay, I'm gonna need you to hold this. Oh, no, you hold this.
Yeah,
like it's genius.
But then, and then this next bit here, she's freaking out and almost drops it. He's like, "Oh my god! Oh my god!
Okay, honey,
no, that would have been bad. That would have been bad,
sweetie. Okay, I'll just take this back."
And actually, I really right here. And I love.
She's like wigging out. He's like, "Oh, okay,
give me that." And he takes it. He takes it back from her, and it's great because he goes, "Okay, you're freaking out. You're a little hysterical." And he takes it back from her, and he actually goes, "It's not because you're a woman."
Yeah.
I was like, I love that
it's
moment.
Great. And it's great. And also, the really creepy one is, it's not going to hurt. It's not going to hurt. You're not going to feel anything.
You're going to blow up instantly. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You're going to be here, and then you're not. And that's all.
Yeah.
And there's no transition. It's weird.
Yeah, he's trying to be very kind.
It's actually kind of comforting.
Waving it in, literally waving it in her face.
In a terror situation, it's like, I don't want to hurt. Nope, you won't. Trust me.
Yeah.
You'll be gone the second after you notice something's going wrong.
That was a weird, one of those wonderful kind of like, you know, I wish I hadn't read that. I think there's literally a website called Things I Wish I Didn't Know or something like that. It's called.
Yeah. I would not be surprised.
Yeah.
I just recently saw,
Yeah. It's like, and literally don't click on that.
Anytime you see a Reddit thread, like, what do you know that you wish you didn't? Don't.
Don't.
Because not only is that the one thing that one person didn't want to know, it's everything that every person didn't want to know.
But the one of the ones I read was just like, well,
Trey,
I kind of want to know it. Well, it's kind of good news in a way, I guess. But the idea of, if you die of a traumatic thing, someone like just doing the math is, you know, nerve reactions are actually much slower than, you know, they're pretty slow, actually, really. You know, there's a measurable time, you know, from when you stick a pin in your toe to your brain going, oh, my toe hurts.
It's reflex
testing. So if you die in some manner that's fairly quick, even a, you know, a high-speed car accident, you know, they say pretty much you're dead before you can understand you're dead. So you literally will not feel anything. Supposedly.
Yeah.
But how do you know? That's the problem.
At 90 miles an hour, that telephone pole won't give you time to go, hey, a telephone pole.
Yeah. You have time to go, oh, shit.
You'll go up.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, you mentioned like the only blue screen, but I'm pretty sure that this isn't blue screen. Isn't it not some blue screen in the background?
Could be.
Maybe.
Or rear or something.
It kind of looks like blue screen to me.
Yeah, or rear.
It
could be rear.
Rear projection, yes, but I mean, in terms of not a real
thing certainly,
that's happening.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Just looking at
rear projection is probably more likely,
That would have been a really good key on Dennis Hopper's
hair. Yeah, that would have been real good. So you're probably right, and that's why it has that look, because RP is you know, a good technology, but it's not
perfect,
It has some issues. So.
On that subject, on the previous subject, it's like, and I'll wait, go check all the transcripts you can find for black boxes. The last thing that's ever said is "oh shit."
Yeah, that's what they say.
Boom.
It's a reflex we have. You were asking about here comes the moment of
His head just rolls off.
Yeah,
like, it just goes bang.
It's as shitty as like, when someone's head rolls off in an RVD film. It's that bad.
Oh, here we go. Now it's on. Yeah, was, it's you, like that. You
was,
see the,
I was making a joke.
You don't want to see the body like snap
boom,
more.
Gone.
Yeah, like, yeah. It works. I mean, it's pretty much how it works.
At the end of the day, yeah, that's probably fairly realistic.
Yeah. At least the body did get yanked out of the way instead of like sort of hovering there and, you know, like they do in a lot of movies.
Yeah.
But
I didn't realize my head was that easy to pop off.
Oh, man.
It really is. It's a bad is. It's a bad design. If anyone believes in intelligent design, fire the designer.
Yeah.
Wait, so all the critical important stuff, is it just this little thin thing is holding all that together?
That's why that's connected by 4 pounds of force.
Yeah, that's why babies are so, be careful with the head because it's really not on tight yet.
These things are so badly designed. You can
kill my baby.
You can kill it by picking it up. That's how badly we thought this through.
My baby is dead now. What'd you do? Nothing.
I picked it up. Well, see, don't be doing that.
Just be careful when you like touch someone because their head falls off.
You know, you asked what sort of things, you know, there's an issue with it. Even though they set it up, it might be just sort of an approach kind of a thing. The idea of our only option is to make it jump the track.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, it explodes through a street and, you know, lands on Hollywood Boulevard or wherever they land. It's like, I understand it's a movie and you want to, you know, the high climax and the movie's called Speed and okay.
No other way to break a subway.
It's kind of like I'd almost want to like, I mean, I'm okay with the this is messed up and we'll probably die. But the fact that he's doing it deliberately, I think I would almost, and I know you want your hero to be proactive and blah blah blah, but I think I would rather be like we can't stop the goddamn thing, you know. That's it. I can't stop it. It's a runaway, and you've got a bomb on you, and life kind of sucks. And what a day, huh? You want to get lunch after? You know, the sunshine ending. Like, well, we're screwed. So
what happened to the trigger?
That happened.
What happened to our bomb trigger?
I'm assuming he had it when he ran back in.
He kept it. Oh, he pulled the vest off of her. Oh,
okay.
Okay.
So he presumably, defused it.
He tossed the vest and the trigger and they blew up behind him.
Okay.
Yeah, nice. Now, see, there you go. That might have been, and it probably came up in the story conference, you know, that might have been like, well, wait, he's got an explosive device. Surely you can stop the train with that somehow. You know, like there's a desperate measure to try. Yeah. Like, well, what if I blow the wheels off the train? Will that stop
the
it?
The opposite of a nuclear exit strategy for the Earth. Instead of having the nuke behind you and pushing you out, put it in front of you and stop you.
And stop yourself.
Watching this yesterday again, it was like, because there's the whole bit where they have to jump over the gap in the freeway. And then there's this where it's like, subway's not finished. My roommate again was like, what is wrong with this city?
You know what's fucked up?
It's a funding thing.
I'll tell you this. Future civilizations will think that your roommate was right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your roommate just didn't know LA.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I'll tell you this.
We're totally like that still.
Yeah. I live in a shit part of LA, and our cities, our streets are always under construction. And you know what the result is? Nothing. It's like they fix streets halfway on a constant cycle. So they're always working on them. They're never done.
It's a roving pattern.
Roving pattern of, you know, what's crazy is this one curb was kind of knocking a car off the street every few months.
Yeah.
We fixed that curb. Does it dump water into the ocean, right? No. Yeah. It's still going to flood
and
rain.
That's the next round.
There's other guys that do that. That's not what we do.
That's not my job.
Well, of course, if they fix the whole street at once, they have to close the street, which, you know, then the world ends if you do that in Los Angeles. So
that was the funny thing about Carmageddon, so-called Carmageddon. It's like, nobody go on the 405. You can't. It's going to be awful. And the entire city's reaction to that after a certain amount of press was, I won't drive that weekend.
Yeah.
And then all of the highways were wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
As opposed to
all
avoid
of
the 405.
Not just the 405.
No, literally
anywhere.
You couldn't get on the 405. And everyone's like, then fuck it, because everyone's going to be trying to drive everywhere else, and it's going to be traffic. And everyone thought that equally. And the result was, if you got on the 101 that day, wide open.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I had that happen to me at Disneyland once. We went to Disneyland even though we were like, fuck, it's going to be so crowded. It was some holiday or something. And we went, and it was like, apparently everyone else had that thought and was smart enough not to go anyway.
So
and
no
so
one
it was
Disneyland.
Like just us at Disneyland. It was so great.
They're basically ripping off the ending of Silver Streak here, which they've admitted to. they've copped to the fact that this was sort of inspired by the end of Silver Streak.
Well, this wasn't originally in the script. This whole subway sequence.
No.
The movie ended when they got off the bus. originally.
Really?
They were on their little plank, and like, you know, the basically the line, I you know, I don't know this for a fact, because I didn't read it, but
hard circumstances.
But yeah, that line would have been kind of the end of the movie. And
it's
then,
a good movie end.
Yeah, because originally...
They just Return of the King 30 minutes on to the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, because originally also... The Dennis Hopper character did not exist. The Jeff Bridges character would have been revealed to actually be the Mad Bomber.
Daniels?
Daniels, yes. Thank you.
Jeff Bridges was in contention
for the role. Someone
and
in
so
the chat.
Was, so was Ed Harris thing. At that point. Yeah. Ed Harris would have played the partner slash Mad Bomber.
Man, I want Ed Harris and Christopher Walken to play every role. I do. It's a character flaw with me that I just want Ed Harris in every movie.
I think so. As much as like, okay, fine, that was good, and it was a nice.
And then the sirens. Timing.
The sirens are here to help.
Well, because apparently a subway car just burst onto Hollywood Boulevard in front of the Man's Chinese. But yeah, it's like this felt like, you know, we need a big ending. So what the fuck? The train goes fast, explodes out of the ends on Hollywood Boulevard, and it's. Yeah, it's 90% okay. But if it's my one quibble is like, it feels just a tad bit tacked on. It could have been brought in just a little bit more.
The
solidly.
Thing is, the first act, elevators, there's really not a lot of fridge logic there. And the bus, there's very little comparatively to that. And this, there's a lot of fridge logic.
Yeah.
The subway part is a lot of, they could have.
Yeah. They didn't have to do it that way quite.
Yeah, so it introduces a little bit of an anticlimactic feel to it.
And weirdly, even you could get rid of it just by getting rid of the part where he, like you said, you want him to be proactive, but just by getting rid of the part where he deliberately sped it up and then do everything else the same, then it feels a little less insane.
Yeah.
And tacked on.
Where he was trying to control the outcome by speeding it up to jump the tracks to get out in the Hollywood Boulevard.
Whereas
it's like if you accidentally ended up there, you'd be like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. We didn't die.
We didn't hit a solid wall.
There's no way he could have known that
and
was going to be the result.
If you had done that, that would have been surprising and inevitable.
Yeah.
Because it's like, of course, if you hit a corner at the full range speed of a subway
and
car,
ramp,
you're going to go off the rails, and you're going to, if there happens to be construction happening, you're going to go off the wrong little thing.
You're going to be somewhere.
I think
but if you decide, if I do that, then this, I will go off the rail, and I'll go off the...
I think it's just a different... You get distracted by the fridge logic of he's like... We need to jump the tracks, and you're like, wait, why?
Why? You know, not to mention that there's and this is a complaint that I have, a quibble I have about a lot of movies that do a very similar thing. Almost any movie with a big grandiose car chase, we've talked about this before, is, you know, he comes bursting out of the ground on Hollywood Boulevard. Not that he even knew that was the case. And Michael Scott, look, you worked on this movie too.
I am awesome.
You're with you and I was eight. You and Jan DeBont, you're tight. You know, it comes exploding out of the ground. There's workmen, you know, walking by. The cars are skidding out of the way. It's like that could have been a massacre. You know, your grand plan could have killed 100 people.
You could have knocked out a putting your hands in their man's cement ceremony. You could have just killed Meryl Streep.
It's Hollywood Boulevard. There could be a flipping parade. You could have killed a busload of nuns.
You could have erupted at the Oscars.
Yeah. So the difference between being a hero and being, you know, a convicted felon who goes to jail for life for endangering, you know, children and orphans is, you know, timing is really all there is, according to movie
logic.
There
was a red light on Highland that second, and there was no cars in the street at that moment.
You lucky son of a
bitch. It's also the flip that the plane that the bus ran into and then exploded magnificently was being towed and was not taxiing.
And not full of people.
Exactly. Although a lot of people were confused about that. Like, what about the people in the plane? It's like, well, if you look closely, there are no people.
It's a cargo plane.
Although, to be fair, there's an issue with, there's a bomb, there's a bus with a bomb on it running around. What are you doing? Don't move anything. Just leave everything where it is.
What idiot is towing a plane right now?
Yeah, we can drive around LA and not close down the freeways. If you're circling a bus with a bomb, I think they would close down
LAX. But
back
to my previous point, you guys, all of us who live in LA, if on your Twitter and on LAist and the news and all that said, if you live in LA, don't go outside. They're trying to control for a bomb on a bus. That would be Tuesday.
Yeah.
Not that happens all the time, but it's one of those things where it's like, huh, weird day in L.A.
Well, that's what we'd say, what part of town?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Don't just tell me L.A. for heaven's sake.
Exactly.
Is it Compton or
is
what?
Is Burbank okay? Because I have to go.
Hollywood?
I want to call.
Okay, that's fine.
Exactly,
I just want to go to Jack in the Box. It's like two blocks. I can do that, right? That's no problem.
Anyway, so speed, in conclusion.
Give me what I need.
what I learned from this commentary is that we've gotten really good at talking through movies where it's just sort of like, yep, that, good
well,
job.
You wouldn't think so.
Yeah, I know. we've basically...
That's just because we're well-rounded people who can talk about other
exactly,
things.
Exactly. Our defense mechanism for a movie where it's like everything is pretty much working pretty well and it's a great movie is... Let's talk about the actors. Let's talk about things like that.
It's
and
perfectly fair to
at,
do so.
At the end of the day, Speed is just, and it was and still is, it's a good tension-filled action blockbuster movie, and it's good stuff. And there's, at least for us on this particular day, not much to really say about it other than the fact that it's fucking awesome. I like this movie. I'll watch it whenever it's on. In fact, I bought it today. I'll watch it again. it's Speed. It's good. It's not like something that stands in your memory like, you know, trade disputes, but like Shawshank or something like that. It's not one of those kind of movies. It's just no, it's there, and if you ever go back to watch it again, you know it's still there. It's awesome. It's fine. And it doesn't offend you, but it also doesn't excite you. It's just like, wow, they did a lot right. And high five, Speed. Cool story, bro. Yeah. Move on. But good job, Jan de Bont, and I'm glad we got this and Twister out of you and then the rest. I still hold out hope. You were born in the 40s, but it's not too late, man.
there's still time.
He's got one scheduled for next year.
Oh, good. That's good. But Speed and Twister were a weird... for us today, we do this as a double feature, and they are an impressive double feature, especially considering Speed is his first movie. Jan de Bont came out swinging, and for us, not for everyone, mileage varies, etc. He hit two pretty strong 400-footers.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, well, there you go. Not everyone can nail this. You did. Our problem is just that we don't have much to say about it because we're just not intelligent or eloquent people.
Or Dutch.
Or Dutch.
Well,
there were no Dutch angles.
Actually, there were a couple.
Oh, you would say that.
No. There were a few, like when he was underneath the...
I'm kidding.
When he was underneath the bus and
oh, that would make sense.
She was pointing out the he was pointing out Sandra Bullock. She's like in charge now when she's like shouting orders. Those were Dutch angles on her.
Anyway, cool story, bro. Seth.
Dutch story, bro.
I enjoy it quite a bit. I enjoyed seeing it again. Because I'll be honest, unlike Mike, I did not pre-watch again because I wasn't planning on sitting in front of the
Seth
mic.
Seth was here, so. And then he was like, there's an open mic, dude, and you brought donuts. You're in.
Sit. You're in. You're on the show.
Was there anything that surprised you about this viewing or this conversation?
He's playing the Sandra Bullock role. Drive.
Yeah.
get behind the wheel.
No, I would say it doesn't. I don't think it reaches, because like we were saying at the end, it kind of has some issues. It doesn't quite fit the diff. Definition of like a perfect movie. It's really close, but it doesn't quite land there. Even still, if there was a hypothetical box of movies that you were putting together to distribute out to, you know, up and coming and
Modern Hollywood, guys, you should
be learning about what you've been doing wrong. Just a box of example movies, I would definitely put this on it, because while there are a quibble here and there, across the board, it's like, why have we not had the past five years of movies that are...
Yeah.
Like this. So it seems like somewhere along the line, this style of, no, it's just damn good. It doesn't have to be insane, but
and there are examples, but it's not the trend at all.
There are definite examples of really good movies in the past couple of years.
Even stupid high concept thriller movies.
Oh yeah, but I think it's that argument that across the board there seems to be an emphasis on the VFX heavy and the quicker turnaround and just lots of things adding up to the fact that we no longer get a steady stream of, oh, we had a movie every other month this year and it was good. And there were some other ones in. I think we're down to we had three this year and they were really good. So
you're listening to four guys who work in visual effects for a living say, knock it off.
Yeah.
Hey,
already.
I worked on Muppets, and the big thing about Muppets was it was all practical.
It's like listening to four loggers say, knock it off with the chairs.
Stop buying those chairs.
No, Speed itself, very happy to have seen it again. I
it's a fun movie.
I'm curious to go home and actually watch Speed 2 just as a masochistic thing.
Don't. It's on Netflix streaming. Don't. I had never seen Speed 2.
See, that's the thing.
I made it this whole time going, I'll bet you it sucks. And at the last possible second, it was on Netflix. It was the wrong night. I was drunk and it was Valentine's Day. Oh. And I was like, I'll give it a shot. My God.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it?
It's
everything. Everyone does the thing they don't really like to do on Valentine's Day. So you
that's true.
What was his name? No. Yeah.
It has been...
Speed 2 is... No, really? They're... bear in mind, I actually people give me shit about this when it's a movie that everyone else likes, but when no one else likes it, it's a quality of mine. I made it 15 minutes into Speed 2 and went, nope. And I don't know what happens for the next hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah, this
but I made it. I've seen it, and I don't remember what happened. It's crazy.
Speed 2, absolutely none of the lessons learned by anyone in Speed were carried through.
Yeah. Now, was it?
It's a different movie.
Did Jan de Bont direct Speed 2?
Yes, he did.
He did direct it. That's crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
That's wild.
You can tell that one probably had a lot of production.
I'll tell you the ending of Speed 2. Speed 2 is the same ending.
The cruise hits the port, right?
Yeah, it's the same ending as this one, except with a cruise ship. Yeah. And it's a huge experience. You know, it's a huge, huge scene of a cruise ship plowing into a city. You know, again, mostly pre-CG. There's some CG going on, some proto-CG and stuff, but mostly it's a gigantic freaking prop plowing into a big set. And, you know, you just kind of go, well, that happened. Okay.
They sure spent money on that.
In that case,
that was expensive,
in that
I bet.
Case, it really is. Cool story, bro.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, what about you? You just revisited this the other day.
I did. And like I said, I was really impressed. The kind of tacked-on third act, the subway. It could be better. It could be better, but everything leading up to that, because that is another thing. I mean, we're talking about how well the movie does, you know, problem, solution, but solution causes new problem, and on and on and on. And I think the issue is that it does run into the bit where it's like, we have solved the problem.
Right.
Period.
Your solution should always cause a problem.
We have not caused the new problem. Aside from that, there's just one that's floating out there, Dennis Hopper, that we haven't solved yet. So that's the moment where the movie does stop and then start again. Yeah. And maybe that's why it doesn't quite feel right with the rest of it, in a sense. But, you know, I said with Twister that it wasn't a movie that I would, if someone was like, I want to watch more of the important, you know, the landmark movies. Twister would not be one of the ones on the list. Speed would not be one of the ones on that list. But for someone who wanted to get into screenwriting, someone who wanted to learn how to write really thrilling, engaging action-oriented screenplays, Speed would definitely be on the list that I would say, go look at that. Go study that. It has a problem in the third act. I would warn them, but in terms of a connection. But everything that happens on the bus,
right?
That is just should be the textbook.
Do Ocean's 11 and Speed go together on any list?
Probably that one. Yeah, because they're the same thing. It's
how
one thing leads to another
and be entertained at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. One thing leads to another and another and another until finally it's resolved. In fact, Ocean's 11 does that even better because there's not another 20-minute sequence after that of them, you know, having a Blues Brothers chase with the cops or something. You know, it's the heist is over, they succeed, and they kind of you're out almost, you know,
spoilers.
5 minutes later. But sorry,
they get the money in Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's been 10 years.
Yeah, it's been more than that.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be.
So, like I said, I hadn't seen it in a long time. I was expecting it to be cheesier, and I was going to have to give it more of a handicap than I did. It definitely kind of has its cheesy moments, but it's...
It does its job.
It does its job, and it's still solid. And again, as we were saying with Twister as well, you can see the Michael Bay version of this. I mean, he's made it a couple times. you can see the Michael Bay version of this in your head, and I actually appreciated how much more chill the movie was about just being like, look, there's a bus plowing through L.A. I don't need to get nuts with the way I shoot this, you know?
On the subject of that, before we go to Trey, can you briefly tell the Michael Bay phone booth anecdote that you know?
Huh? Oh, sure. Well, yeah.
It relates.
Yeah, it relates to basically the movie Phone Booth, which is a thriller that takes place almost entirely with a guy trapped in a phone booth, and there's a guy trapped in a phone booth for the whole thing, and there's a sniper around like tormenting him on the phone, and that's pretty much the whole movie, and they were you know, it's like a Hitchcock type of thriller, and that's I haven't watched it in a while, but that's probably another one that's like, how do you keep that going? You know, that would be, because I remember being impressed that Phone Booth did quite a good job of it. It didn't really flag or anything, but they were looking for various directors. It eventually went to Joel Schumacher, who, you know, your mileage may vary on him, but he did a pretty good job with Phone Booth. But one of the people that they spoke to was Michael Bay, and apparently the first thing he said when he comes into the meeting is, all right, how can we get him out of this fucking phone booth? And they were like, thank you. You have completely failed to understand.
Okay, how do we get the people off the bus?
Yeah, exactly.
Nope, we don't.
Okay, why don't they just stop and get off? That's what I don't understand.
Exactly.
That I guess that's one way to do it. Yeah, sure.
That's anyway, Trey, what about you, Speed?
Like it very much. Thank you. I do think I think that's a good way to put it. Is it's like, oh, so you want to write action thrillers? No, don't see, you know,
The Island.
Yeah, don't see X. See this. You know, this is a movie that nowadays, you know, Speed, you could do, you know, it's actually a fairly elaborate film still, but you know, Speed looks like a low budget movie. Yeah. It looks like an indie. Oh, yeah. Looks like an indie movie now. You know, so like, yeah, but see, you don't have to have fucking Transformers to have an action movie. You can, you know,
Speed, Die Hard, pick 'em.
Can you get a bus? Because you can do an hour and a half with a bus if you know what the fuck you're doing. You know,
you can't afford to lock the freeway? Do it on a green screen.
Yeah, you can do it on a green screen. Now you can literally.
For 405, the movie.
Yeah, why not? I would put it on that sort of how to, okay, you know, neither movie is perfect, but damn, you know, can't complain. This and Die Hard, I think, are very much of a piece of, you know, here's how. Here's about as good as it's ever been done. Is these two movies and maybe a few other, but this particular, because this really is, it's Die Hard on a bus. I mean, that's also the pitch. Yeah. You know, it's like it's Die Hard on a bus. But by God, they got it right when they did it. You know, and they got it, made an entertaining movie out of it. So I think it's. I actually was surprised when we were getting ready for this. I didn't rewatch Speed because I pretty much have it imprinted in my brain. I've bought it in every medium that videos have come in so far. I think I've bought it. I've even owned it on Laserdisc. But it totally holds up amazingly well. I think for a movie that's pushing 20, and you know, kids should watch it. Kids should eat a good breakfast, a good balanced breakfast, and they should watch this movie.
It's amazing. In this commentary, we've gone from, yeah, we like Speed, to talking about everything around it, to coming back to going, yeah, Speed. Mm-hmm. Fucking Speed, dude.
Speed, dog. Yeah. Am I right?
Anyway, this has been Down in Front, and you can always find more episodes at downinfront.net. iTunes, go to the forum, please. Involve yourself in the conversation, good people, and it's a good forum. And just, even if you're not, if you haven't done it before, lurk. Just literally go to the forum and just read old threads and stuff. And if you want to join, do it. But I think you'll be convinced. It's a cool place to be. The Twitter is Down in Front. The Facebook is Down in Front Show. Email us at downinfrontshow@gmail.com. We have a big old donate button on the front page. We're not asking. We're just kind of saying. But God help us. And Holden Hill designed and maintained the website. And until next week, my name is Steve Christie.
Seth Brower.
My Scott.
Trey Stokes. Sandy, call me.
Thank you very much for listening. Good night. Good night.
Apparently she just broke up with her husband.
Oh, so it could be. You have a chance, dude.
Yeah. Well, I have a shot. Totally have a shot.
Yeah. You should wear the hat.
I'm going to try and get her trapped on a bus with me.
That's it. That seems to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind, relationships formed under extreme circumstances.
I'm counting on that.
Oh, well, there you go.
And see.
That was good.